This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, it's a Friday morning liftoff for this Weekend Confirmed. Ordinarily, we record on a Thursday afternoon, but we're doing it Friday morning right before you get it hot off of the mixing panel where Brooklyn is hard at work right now, dialing in the knobs. I'm Garnet Lee, glad to have you with us today, and we've got a great panel. Mr. Zav Damatos is here sipping his coffee at the end of the table.
I think I'm on my third cup right now. It is a rare early morning record for us.
You can tell by the speed I'm talking that I've already had a couple of coffees. I'm down as well with the coffee monster. And Mr. Michael McWhorter here from Game Trailers.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I like how you did the NPR voice. It's really great to be here today.
Yeah, thank you. Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Terry.
How do you like that? How do you like the new digs over here? Now you're on the west side of LA with us.
Yeah, it's great. I love working over there. It's good to get out of my house because I was working from home for about 5 years, and that kind of drove me a little batty.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah,
yeah. So
awesome crew over there. You have some new projects coming that are going to be cool to be checking out on Game Trailers.
Yeah, so I am leading their news stuff over there. So I'm doing like editorial news and opinion. I'm writing a blog called Side Mission over there. And it's kind of buried on the homepage right now, but we're going to be doing some stuff, so kind of floating that up a little bit more.
Find it. I tell you what, we will link it in the show notes.
Yeah, you can just go to sidemission.com.
Sidemission.com is your
URL? We got the URL, yeah.
Way to go!
Yeah, it wasn't cheap.
Not through... oops.
Yeah.
And then next to you, Mr. David Jaffe is here from Eat, Sleep, Play.
Hello.
How I did that?
I did. It was fantastic.
Stumbled it out there. Yeah. He's been hard at work on some game. I don't know. You might have heard of it. Twisted Metal.
Yeah. We've been outside. We finished Monday. So this is our last weekend of tuning numbers and final pickup placement. And they are metaphorically, I suppose. I can't speak anymore. They're dragging it out of my fucking hands. Because, I mean, it's just like, it'll never be enough. You know, I want to put more in. Scott wants to put more in. And we're done. So I cannot wait to be done because it's been a long haul. But yeah.
Well, I imagine most of us would be like, just play it. We're like ready to play the damn game.
I hope so. I love it. I mean, I'm super proud of the team and super proud of Sony and just the work we've done. But yeah, it's been a long haul. You talk about working at home. I mean, I work at home. The team's out in Utah, and I loved it at first, and I still love aspects because I have little kids, and it's great to see them when they get them from school and stuff. But man. I'll tell you what, you can go a little fucking stir crazy, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
like it's cabin fever after a while. You know?
Even though you're like talking, you're kind of talking to people through the internet all day long too, because you do like video blogs and all that stuff.
Well, people always are like, people, even when I do video blogs, like, get back to work, Jaffe. And I'm like, dude, I work at home. It's my dog and me. And when I video blog or go out to the forums, it's because it's if you go to your job and you take a break at the water cooler, water cooler, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
if you
hang
out in the break room or whatever it is you do, that's kind of my equivalent of that. It's like I'll surf the net for 15 minutes or 10 minutes while I'm eating lunch, you know. So I love that part of it, but I do miss the energy.
Well, the other thing too is and I hate to complain about these awesome jobs that
I know. Fair enough. That's
but the one thing that is kind of weird about it is like when you work from home, you never leave work. So there are a lot of times when I would work until like 9 or 10.
You fall asleep
at
the office, you wake up at the office, you leave the office.
And it's like now I can be like, I can leave work and
I love,
drive home.
Yeah, but I love that though. I love the fact that I can like, it's 2 in the morning and I'm like, fuck, I know a lot of your listeners probably know who I am and they're like, why is this guy cussing all the time? I apologize. I'm going to try, you know, anyway, point being is
it's all right. We're M rated.
Okay.
Yeah,
so I love that it's like it's 2 in the morning, you know, I'm working on a level, you know, and I'm like, I'm going to go to McDonald's. It's 24 hours and I'll go like get a Diet Coke and come back. And it's kind of fun to have that access all the time, you know, but
I used to get it from the girlfriend when I'd be like,
you got it from the girlfriend?
Well, I got the business from the girlfriend.
That's not a better. You didn't
I've never done the strap on thing. I had a girl.
You're not
once
a pegger.
Said,
you don't.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think.
You think so?
I've done some research on the internet.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we'll Google that right now. We'll be all over it.
Oh, yeah, everyone right now is probably Googling
hold it, pegger. Hold it, pegging. That's from what.
Arrgh, come over here and let me use my pegger on you. It's kind of like where the peg leg came from, right? It's all splinters.
Search
and...
mega upload for
I don't
pegging
know why you're
videos.
Fucking a pirate, but anyway, what? Yeah. I'm sorry.
We're now going completely meta. You
anyway,
dropped in the mega
what I was talking about before getting railed in the ass was. Yes. Was no, that just like, I'd be like, I'm working at 8:30. She'd be like, are you done working? I'd be like, yeah, I'm almost done. And then like an hour later.
Then it's 10
like,
o'clock.
Can you get off the fucking computer? And I'd be like, yeah okay, I'll
but,
stop.
But can you ever let it go, right?
No.
You never, I mean, because you love your job, I imagine.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
All right, so, you know, the guys down in Irvine are having a little trouble getting Diablo 3 out the door. We've got that in the news. They're going to restructure entire systems out of the game. So we got that coming up. We got NPDs from December. We're going to talk a little bit about our game of the year. That we just wrapped up, and I don't know, I guess we could talk about Twisted Metal since David's here. Although, many of you people are probably turning off, you're like, oh, last week you had Ken Ralston on, he was just there to promote his game, and now you got David Jaffe on, he's just there to, you're just here to promote your game, right?
I'll tell you what.
It's transparent.
In honor, and I'm not shitting you, because I loved listening to you guys, or to you on 1UP, I love this show. We don't have to say a goddamn thing about Twisted Metal.
No, we haven't.
I'm here as a fan, and I'm here as a grateful fan. So I appreciate the invite.
I mean, I was sort of being shitty about the people
know,
who complain
I know
like
you
that,
were.
It pisses me off.
I know, but that's real. I mean, look, I'm here whenever you call, because I love the show, and I love what you guys do. So
thanks,
we do not have to talk about Twisted Metal if you guys don't want to.
And then the other thing you guys, I'm going to take a quick moment to start off, is another thing you guys have been writing me a lot about over the last 2 days is my stance and our stance on SOPA. So I think we're all feeling a little relief this morning on Friday that SOPA and PIPA appear to have finally made it through the Beltway shield wall in Washington so that the people who run the country understand that those were not good provisions and that they were tough things for us. And a lot of people have been asking, well, why haven't you been out there campaigning for this? So I wanted to just say... yes, I have an opinion on it, obviously, as a content provider. I think that, and I don't mean to sound arrogant, but I think that it, you know, almost universally we agree that what they were proposing could potentially have been used in a very bad way to have a tremendous chilling effect on everything that we do from, you know, shows like this to something as simple as having Craigslist on the net. So if you're interested in that, you know, do what I've done. Call your representative. That's the most effective way to communicate with them. And by the way, like something that was communicated to me a long time ago, because I keep up with some of this stuff, is that, you know, you can do online petitions and you can send emails, but when you hit that switchboard at the representative's office, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Because that means to them that you're a voting constituent who is active enough to be engaged and will take action, and that gets them concerned. And then listen to people who are really experts on this subject. Depending on your potential or your chosen political point of view, you have a number of commentators out there who are experts on this field. I personally think that right now Rachel Maddow is really hitting the nail on the head with her her discussions and insight into the subject matter. So, you know, go listen to those folks. Listen to folks who day in and day out are on the pulse of that. Hopefully, like you think, we're on the pulse of the video game world.
Yeah. I just wanted to add, too, it's a little weird for me just because I can't vote in this country because I'm an immigrant.
Damn right.
Being Canadian and all, you know, the far off land that is Canada. So it was a little strange for me. And people did ask why Shaq News specifically didn't black out. And I think, you know, personally, I outlined my stance on SOPA and PIPA as well. And I agree with you. I think that it was not sound legislation. But I think in terms of the blackout situation that happened, our primary dedication is to the reader, and I think that for us, it was more important for us to examine the issue and present it to the reader versus taking a personal stand, and that's why we didn't black out.
It's not our subject to own. You know, leave it to the political pundits who, you know, people who cover this stuff every day. It's their world to own. Just like I don't want them to try and own, like we were talking about before the show, I don't want them to get into the middle of the socioeconomic stuff in Grand Theft Auto. And now David's going to take the shit out of me. Go ahead.
No, because I agree with that. It's not that. I'm making the face because I have to fart. And also because, I'm making the face because two things. One is I what you said before the show, I agree with, which is you're right. I mean, to, you know, and I'm the same. I mean, I'll go off on political issues, and I know you know, an eighth of what I should know to be actually having an opinion that I'm sharing with anyone other than people I'm sitting at a breakfast table.
Yeah, I just
with,
don't right? feel, I don't feel like I own the subject matter enough.
But at the same time, though, I do think what's really interesting to me, and also kind of, I don't know if the word, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but tragic comes to mind, is because a lot of people in the media, and because we're such a media saturated culture, there's a lot of people who know about SOPA, right? I mean, yeah. If you're watching the debates last night with the Republicans and they bring it up, you've got an audience, and no, they're booing it. I mean, yeah. It's out there.
No, I was just laughing because suddenly now all of those Republican candidates are, oh, of course, I'm against it.
Right. But the fact that the audience was fully aware of it, right? And I think that's because a lot of people who aren't just the Rachel Maddows of the world are speaking out about it and bringing it to people's attention. And I think there's value to that, although I agree about owning it. But the tragic part about it is there's this law that Obama signed on New Year's Eve, right? The Defense Act, right? Which basically allows, and he says, you know, in his statement, oh, I'm not going to do this, which is who gives a shit what your statement says. It's not legally binding. And the next president could.
Wait, I signed it reluctantly.
Right. Yeah. It's like, you know,
you still signed it.
And I immediately went, and I've always been a Barack Obama supporter. And I'm like, dude, I'm done. And I got off their mailing list. I'm not donating. I'm not voting, you know, because I'm like, you can't fucking sign a law that says you can detain an American citizen on American soil without a trial.
Without due process.
And it's like, to me, that is as important as SOPA is. That is substantially more important. I mean, they're both, you know, chipping away at fundamental American freedoms. And so I'm kind of worried and bothered by the fact that we would all get our panties in a wad about, you know, oh, I, you know,
I might lose my internet.
I might lose my internet. It's like, you might be in jail, motherfucker, for doing nothing other than protesting your government. I mean, and I don't want to be, you know, dramatic.
Alarmist,
but it's possible, you know, right. So that's worrisome to me.
Well, it's a good advice in general that you should always be vigilant about watching over your freedoms and what's going on in the world and paying attention to those things and not just when it is going to affect your internet tomorrow. And that's all we should say about politics, right? Let's talk about some games.
And I think we are actually on an NPR show now.
Yeah, it's just
sweaty balls.
Sweaty balls.
And we're
David Jaffe's sweaty balls.
Sweaty balls.
Hey, so before the show, we got into this big conversation about narrative in games, because last week when Ken was here, we had a very long discussion about role-playing games and how you bring narrative and storytelling into that. And David was listening to that. And I'll let you sort of take the flow there, because you were thinking about whether or not that stuff matters. And I guess we sort of had an impact on you.
You did. I mean, I was saying that I'm figuring out my dice talk, which I'll be doing in a couple of weeks in Vegas. And I was going to talk about narrative and gameplay and how I've always come at it from this sense that, I mean, I love stories. I love movies. I love comics. I love novels. I'm not this anti-story guy, and I love emotional art. You know, I cry at commercials and stuff. So I'm a very open book, and I'm very open to that kind of entertainment. But I've always had a problem with it in interactivity, and I think, and I've always come at it from the angle that I think there's a fundamental problem with, you know, what you're asking the player to do and then disengaging from the interactive, whether it's a cutscene or whether it's happening in real time and you're able to somewhat engage with it. And sort of the two just don't seem to meet to me. I always disengage when it's story time, you know, and I'd rather watch a movie if I want a great story, which is not to say I don't want stories in video games. And so I was going to do this talk, and I was just going at it from the place that, you know what, I'm probably in the majority here. This is probably me, and everyone else is happy enough with what they get, and it's better than not having a story, and I would agree with that. But then when I heard you talking, you know, a lot of times online, there's people who will kind of defend, you know, games are stories, they're the next storytelling medium. And I'll be like, you know, I don't know who that person is. I don't know if they're saying it because, you know, they've got some vested interest in, you know, making themselves feel good about this really expensive hobby, or they genuinely believe that. But I know you, and I know that you wouldn't, when you said your form of entertainment that you choose is, I know it was games with stories, it might have been RPGs with stories. I was like, you know, you wouldn't have any reason to say that other than that's simply your choice. And you clearly would rather sit down and play The Witcher 2 primarily or as a key part for its story than you'd want to go out and see Warhorse.
Yeah,
And I was like, you know what, I believe him. And maybe that doesn't mean I'm in the minority with my view, and it doesn't mean that games don't need to continue to evolve the way they tell stories to take into account the stuff that I hate about how games tell stories. But the fact that it allowed me to change my thinking to go, you know what, there are people out there, whether they're a huge group or a small group, that genuinely love what's already happening in the space. And I think that was a really good shift for me to have. So I appreciated it.
Cool.
Did you shift any more than that? Because I remember a couple of years ago, there was that quote of you saying that you wanted to create a game that would make people cry or have emotions. Like, narratively, did your focus shift? Does it shift often in that sense?
I go back and forth between wondering and debating if games as a medium, and I don't mean holodeck. I think maybe one day when we get to that level of technology, yes. Right. But right now, with what we know of games and where we might be in the next 10 years, I debate whether, you know, the concept of being engaged in a story and playing a video game can work. And I go between that and going, it can work, but there's a lot of stuff that we have to do that we have to solve. There was a great article on EGM this month where Harvey Smith, and I forget the guy he works with it, is it Arcane or Arcane?
Arcane.
Or, Arcane. They were talking about a segment in some game where there's a soldier, like in basic training in the game, where he's like shouting, you get over here, blah, 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 you know. And he's like, you know, some people will play that and they'll consciously choose to immerse themselves in that experience. And it'll be a willing and an effort-filled suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. And other people, and I count myself as one, and I always assume this was the majority, would say, hey, I wonder what happens if I stick a grenade in that guy's mouth while he's talking.
You go to the game systems and not the narrative.
Right. And that, I always assume that everybody did that. Mm-hmm. And to hear you speak last week is like, well, maybe no. Maybe, you know, I mean, when you play a game with a story that you love, and I don't mean an RPG with cutscenes, but like if you're talking about Half-Life 2 or something, yeah, where the game is in the story is in the game, you're like, you know, you get into a room. I'm thinking of that scene in Half-Life 2 towards the beginning where it's like you and Alex and the doctor guy, and they're talking, and you can't really do anything except walk around the room and hear, mm-hmm, them talk. For me, I just found myself, not because I'm an asshole, I love stories. Like I said, I would have loved to have been engaged, but I was kind of bored of what they were talking about. And so I just ran around the room and tried to see if I could break shit. Mm-hmm. When you played it, were you like, dude, I am so here and I'm not even moving my character and I'm listening? I mean, what is your experience with that kind of thing?
Well, I don't just stand there, but I do stay away from breaking. I don't think about it consciously of, oh, I'm not going to pay attention or I'm not going to break the game. But I don't know. I guess I sort of mostly pay attention and I probably control the camera much as if I were there, you know, listening to someone. I'm going to pay attention to you, and then I'll turn my head or my point of view and look at whoever's speaking next. And, you know, if they're talking about something, it's on a monitor, I'll go in. I expect to have that sort of ability to be immersed in the game, that if we're standing there and we're talking about something and there's a guy up on a video screen and there's something happening over here behind me, that at any point in time, contextually within the basis of that conversation, if he says, hey, you know, we need to go check out Mr. Coffee, and then we go over and we check out Mr. Coffee. And if he says, hey, I'm surrounded by assholes, I can look around, mm-hmm, and see all those guys. Of course, I'm making this baseball joke, mm-hmm, for, like, give it like a context, because that was popped to mind. But I expect to have that sort of ability to be in the space and interact with those things as they're being brought into the conversation or into the narrative. And so then you get sometimes, you know, this is like, it's sort of twofold. You get that thing where in Uncharted, which has great story because it's well written and has great characters, it's very difficult to have that degree of interaction because you're inside, in essence, movie stages. And so there's all these sets, and you're inside all the sets, and you're so much on the narrative course that you can't step aside from it. It's very difficult to step aside from it. But then Half-Life, like you said, when it's opened up just a little bit, suddenly you're bouncing around the room, and it's very hard to keep you on track.
I would love to see data about Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4, the first Modern Warfare. The part in the beginning where you are being pulled out of the room and executed, mm-hmm, you know, like in the car. I would love to see data about how many people actually move the camera or realize they can move the camera, or if they just thought it was a cutscene, if they were just watching it versus it being interactive. You know what I mean? Because I think that you might be in the majority in the thought that a lot of gamers like to play games just for the game systems and having fun in the game. I don't know that how many people actually are playing for the narrative scope of it. Like, that's how I play.
But how many games do we have that have ham-handed narratives anyway? I mean, they're all, especially like all the Modern Warfares, no offense to the people who write them, because, mm-hmm, they put a lot of work into them. That's still sort of, you know, at best the paperback novel you pick up at the airport before you get on a 10-hour flight to go to London or something,
but,
right?
And that in itself, doesn't that say something? It's like if you're, let's say you're a great storyteller, why in the world would you pick a medium to write your great stories in that clearly, at least a percentage, if not, like you were saying, maybe the majority, are going to have a hard time appreciating it? It's like, if you're a really good writer, go write a movie, because that's a great medium for that. Now, I'm not, again, I have shifted.
There's
my
limitations.
Thought.
There's limitations to each of them. There's a degree of character interaction that you can have in a video game that's unparalleled. It's
unequal. Let me ask you about that. So Skyrim, which I'm backlogged because I've been working a lot on Twisted with the team, but when I'm playing Skyrim, and I love Skyrim, I love it, fucking love that game. But when I go up to characters and we talk and I see, like, you know, 50 things that I can say, do you sit, or even 5 things, do you sit there and go, in your mind, are you like, I am engaged in having a conversation with the character who lives in this quaint little village, or are you going, all right, there's one, now I got to click the next one, now I got to, to me it feels more like information gathering. Is that how it feels to you?
No.
Okay, what does it feel like to
you? I don't process it like that. I simply go through and so I come up to, for instance, I come up to the innkeeper, because that's a very game system oriented sort of interaction, right? Because they have things to sell me, and they have rooms for the night, and they have quests that I could get. And so if I come up to them and I'm there to get a room for the night, I just get my room for the night and go on and go about my business or whatever. And if I have time to fiddle around or whatever and I want to go do a quest, then I ask them for a quest. But I'm not sitting there just banging down the list of, oh, I want to know about this, I want to know about this, I want to know about this, I want to know about this.
And that's not conscious. You're not going, I'm going to enjoy this game as a story. That's just how your brain works.
That's just how it works, yeah. Right, I mean, part of it is because I find that when I start banging through just, I am going to ask everything on the tick list, I get fucking bored.
Yeah. How about games with morality systems like Mass Effect where you have a positive, negative, or neutral trait?
It's like, it's so damn transparent, you know? It really is. I mean, as a matter of fact, that's one of my frustrations. I started playing Star Wars The Old Republic, and besides the fact that the game's just fucking boring, because it's WoW with, and I'm sorry, guys, if you like it, I get it. Star Wars is cool, and it's nice to be back in that world, but it is really, as Jeff described it, click on an enemy and watch countdown timers expire. And you can turn off the interface, which I did because someone on the Shack suggested it. It's still, you're still just doing the same thing. It's not fun for me, who's playing a smuggler, to have firing my cool Han Solo blaster reduced to click a button and watch my character pull up his blaster and go pew, 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 and then wait for it to recharge so I could click it and him pull it up and go pew, pew, pew again. It's just not, I don't know, it doesn't click for me. It just doesn't get me going. But their morality system, right off the bat, spells out for you, this is a light choice, this is a dark choice. Well, now you're reducing it to, I'm going to game the system. Which way do I... And I get it, because there are characters... Because if you're playing a game and you've decided, I want to be a good guy or I want to be a bad guy, then you want to be able to make decisions within the game that make you into a good guy or a bad guy if you're playing it as you're playing a game. I'd rather play the game and see the outcome of my results. See what happened because, oh, I did this or I did that. And then that's really difficult because a game system is only a series of AIs. It doesn't have it doesn't have a great interpretive ability. It can't say, oh, well, in this case, he probably considered the orphan child that might be created if he killed this guy, who, even though he was a bad guy, had, like, it can't think about all those permutations.
The one that shows it the most for me was in Deus Ex, there's a part where you go to the police station and you have to either talk your way in or sneak in. Mm-hmm. And if you sneak in, you're not supposed to be in there. So the game knows you're not supposed to be in there. How does the guy on the fourth floor know that I snuck in through a vent? How does he know I wasn't let in through the gate? Because if you're let in through the gate, they're just like, go in. You know what I mean? And that's sort of the check boxes in the background of the game saying, oh, you went in a certain way, so people need to react to you a certain way.
So Witcher 2, which won our Game of the Year, I think is one of the best examples of games trying to have that world created based off of what you do in the game, because there's so much that dynamically alters throughout the course of the game based off of decisions you make and how you play the game. And that, to me, is why it was a really, really amazing accomplishment.
Yeah, and I think the part of the reason why I love that game is because it's part of the reason why I like Game of Thrones or Battlestar. It is that fantasy world and that setting, but it actually is a political drama that has, it mirrors sort of society. There's racism and sexism, and that was what was so interesting about that game. And it is a linear story versus something like Skyrim, but it allows you to make choices within that game that changes your character. And it's not about making choices to alter the world. Like, you're not, the weight of the world is not on your shoulders like it is like Commander Shepard, for example. It is your isolated experience and you're trying to figure out this conspiracy for yourself, and which was another good thing about Deus Ex, for example.
It's funny that you brought up Mass Effect 3, because I think that Mass Effect 3 sort of falls in a middle ground there, right? Where narrative is very strong, but at the same time, it's not like we're so drawn into it that we don't go to YouTube or wherever to try and figure out how do I have sex with insert character that I wanted to have sex with here. Whereas Witcher 2 has things like sex and drug use and all that kind of stuff in it, and you don't ever get distracted by it because it's just being. It is comfortable in its maturity. Mm-hmm. It's comfortable in just like, you know, here's what we got going on. Here's the story. It makes sense that, yeah, of course he goes over and has sex with this woman, or he has, you know, doesn't worry about drinking or whatever drugs he does. It's like, it's just all part of the world. It's not a big deal. It's equivalent to The Wire in that, you know, that you're watching The Wire and these things happen and you don't get overly upset about it. But then you go to Mass Effect, and you're like, I'm going to sleep with her. Hold on, I'm going to get on my YouTube and figure out how the hell I'm going to do that.
Yeah, but it's like, but in Mass Effect, it's different because they've created a game system of like, okay, if you make these certain decisions, if you talk to them a certain way, if you treat them a certain way, you will end up with this person. Whereas in Witcher, it's just something that happens in the course of the story. And that's the difference between that and in Mass Effect, where you have control over your how people perceive you in the world as either good or bad, yeah. You know? So,
all right. So, that we didn't really talk a whole lot about Game of the Year, but there you go.
Yeah.
How big a deal is stuff like Game of the Year and reviews to you guys who make them? Do you care?
Well, when you win it, it's nice, you know. But reviews, I mean, look, you know, you always want to get great reviews, and if you can get some awards at the end of the year, that's an amazing feeling. Reviews have become less important to me. I mean, they're very important to the success of a title,
sure.
Because these are at least
we
the
know
moment,
that part.
Yeah, well, at least the moment, right? But most of that's because you're talking about huge investments on the part of the gamer, $60, you know. But now, as games are, you know, we're shifting to the digital landscape, you know, a lot more. I expect them to become less and less and less important to some degree. But well, because look at movies, right? You can go to, you know, Transformers doesn't need Roger Ebert to give it a thumbs up. You know, I was going to make a bad joke. It doesn't. You know, it doesn't need that in order to be a great success because people aren't. You know, you're rolling the dice on $5 to $10 on a movie ticket.
Right.
You know. When you're talking about such a high budgeted product and a time investment as a video game right now, it's a lot different. But look, I mean, I haven't gone to review sites to read about, you know, an iPhone game, for example, for 99 cents. There's this new one, was it Word Juice or something that just came out a couple days ago that all my friends on Twitter are talking about?
Puzzle Juice.
Yeah.
Puzzle Juice,
yeah. I haven't played it yet, but when I get home, I expect to buy it. I'm not going to go read a review for it, you know?
That's really, yeah, I've never even thought of it that way. That's
really
interesting.
But I think also part of it is I think, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's just because we're working on Twisted, and you know, Twisted has always been such a, you know, we got like the very first Twisted, we got Game of the Year from EGM, which we thought was the coolest thing in the world. We had never made a 3D game, but we also got like, you know, 4s out of 10, you know, and it's always been that divisive kind of game when it comes to reviews. And so we're not kind of, you know, we're sort of like, you know what? We've left it all on the field with Twisted. We're super proud of what we've done. We feel it's the best twist we've ever made. And so for us, maybe it's just Twisted-centric. I'm kind of like, the reviews, you know what? The reviews I care about on this game are sort of the people who like this kind of game, people who like Twisted, people who like Unreal, Mario Kart, you know, Mortal Kombat. If they love it, we're going to be over the moon happy. If they hate it, we're going to feel shitty about ourselves. But do I care that I might, as much as I want to go on, you know, to GameSpot and see, you know, an 8.5, a 9.5 out of 10, do I care if it's not that? Yeah, I care, but I don't care as much as if I go on to NeoGAF and I see people who love this kind of game go, oh, I was kind of shitty. So
that makes sense.
And that may not be, that may be career changing, or that may just be specific to this title. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, John, there you go. If you're listening right now, the threshold set. He expects an 8.5 on GameSpot. So make it happen for us.
Is he the reviewer? Great. I know where to send the coke and the hookers.
Don't tell his wife. She listens too. They're in the car.
Uh-oh.
Oh, so, man. Stick around.
I'll send one for her too.
We take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we will get into that Twisted game with David Jaffe. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. One such audiobook to consider is A Game of Thrones. If you're a big fan of the TV show, there's a lot of backstory in there that there simply isn't time to include in the show. So listen to the audiobook version. Go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. All right, and we're back. Thanks very much to audible.com for sponsoring the show this week. And do check out Game of the Thrones. Game of the Thrones. I am now that 80? Guy. I am now that guy.
Check out the Game of the Thrones on the internet.
Check it out.
Take the kid.
The Audibles.
You're like my mother, who calls every video game console the Nintendo.
The Nintendo.
Mine says, you know, do you have the cartridge, or you know, so.
You get to go play? Do you get to go play the Nintendo?
The tape.
The tape.
They call it so.
Solve that game tape.
Yeah.
So I thought I would start off with a story about Twisted Metal because it's pretty funny. Back in the early days, I guess it wasn't that early days. It was about 96 or so with PlayStation. It's not that long ago.
I was still in grade school.
It's not that long ago. It's not really that long ago.
I'm laughing because I went to dinner last night with this this girl and she was like, God of War, that's like 10 years ago. I'm just like, fuck you. Fucking old.
I did buy Twisted Metal in the old big box.
I did too. Hey, oh, I got shit over that because I had my name on the back of that box because I was like, oh, well, let's do it like Sierra. So it said, designed by, I think it's Single Track and designed by David Jaffe, just because I wasn't part of Single Track. And we were all designers on it. And, understandably, I was like, well, that's what they do at Sierra. They put the people who work on the design on the back and it created a fucking shitstorm. But anyway, sorry, back to
so my friend lived across the hall in the apartments we lived in. His name is Jim Hurl. If Jim is out there anywhere, Jim, I haven't talked to you in forever, but we used to have, he was crazy. We had a great time. But we would play two games on, well, we actually played three now that I think about it, because we'd also played Sony's football game, NFL Game Day, which you realize, like, they had that really interesting story that just hit on, was that Bleacher Report the other day? About how that was the one game the Madden team was actually worried about.
Oh, yeah.
They said they weren't worried about 2K. They were more worried about NFL Game Day because if Sony ever got its might behind making a really good football game, they could really fuck them up. But we used to play, the two games we really played all the time were Loaded, which, if you don't know about Loaded, it was a blast. It was really great. Gremlin Interactive made a fantastic game. And then Twisted Metal. And we played Twisted Metal all the freaking time and had huge, crazy arguments and fights and, there was like a great back and forth. And it made me think about, as the game's gone on, that sort of, I think it's the same experience that people who were really into GoldenEye had of you're sitting around with your friends on the couch playing games together. And we really lost that in the internet. And this is something, David, you've talked about a bunch. Mm-hmm. And that sort of leads to the question I think a lot of folks have. Shacker Lorem Fall gets us a sort of a starting spot saying, what made you want to come back to Twisted Metal?
There were honestly a lot of reasons. I mean, it wasn't just one. I, the one specifically you're referring to was, we had just started the company. We had just started Eat, Sleep, Play, and Sony had said, let's get you guys, get your feet wet and get the tech built and let's get your pipelines going. And so we did a port of the game Twisted Metal head-on for PS2 just to kind of get things rolling while we were figuring out what our first PS3 game was going to be. And in doing it, that was kind of what we were reminded of, because it was like, I'm a Call of Duty player and I'm a Battlefield player and stuff, but I had felt, and Scott had felt, who runs Eat, Sleep, Play with me, and a lot of the team had felt that had been lost in a lot of shooters. We didn't like the repetitive nature of, stepping outside of a bunker, getting shot in the head, or we didn't, and then having to respawn, or we didn't like, you spawn and you have to walk for 8 to 20 seconds, you get to the fight, you shoot 15 rounds and boom, you're dead again. And you got to do, there was a cadence to it that just wasn't really sitting well with us. And so whenever I've worked on a game, and I've always been really fortunate because Sony has allowed us to sort of make the things that we're excited about, it's usually a response to what's out there that I like, but it's not giving me all of what I want out of it. And so for us, it was going, we miss those split screen days of being able to form relationships with the people that we're playing against sitting next to us on the couch. And in the new Twisted, we put a lot of effort into 2 and 3 and 4 player split screen local, a lot of host options. There's like 30 plus maps for 2 players.
Dude, no one does that anymore. You don't need to do that.
I do it. I mean, it's some of the most fun I've had is sitting around with the QA guys and playing split screen Twisted Metal with the new one, but we also intentionally designed, the health of vehicles, and we kept a power up game. We kept a pickup game versus a loadout intentionally because we wanted to build online relationships where you really do begin to go, whatever the guy's name is, Happy Lightsaber 3, it's like that fucker, you really do build, you can build that now with online games. But when you actually have a chase that lasts 3 or 4 minutes and you're both kind of like racing to get into the health semi, like Knight Rider style, to drive into the back, and he gets there first and then you go off and, that pickup that you really want is respawned, and you're doing that online with 15 other players, to us, that was just, that's not out there. And I don't know if that's going to be welcomed with open arms, but what we were saying before the show, I'm so proud of it because we achieved what we wanted to achieve. Is now there's an online game out there and a local game for multiplayer that gives people that experience. And are they going to come, as a huge group or a small little niche group? We don't know. to experience it, but it's what we felt was missing. And so it's been fun to kind of try to create that couch experience for online. Frankly, I still like same couch experiences more when it comes to multiplayer.
It's really hard. I mean, there's something that just doesn't communicate through playing, you know, with a headset or the internet. And then part of it, I think that's part of the reason, you know, we try to talk at times about why are people such jackasses when they get online? And it's not just the anonymous part. I mean, there's more to it than that. Because, I mean, when Jim and I would play Loaded and Twisted, it's not like we were nice to each other. We were always talking mad shit to each other. We were always, I mean, hell, it would probably almost come to fists sometimes, because especially if you got down to the end of a game and, you know, something crazy happened and one of you, like, did something great and was a little bit too celebratory and you were like, fucker, sit down.
But, you know, a lot of it, too, is, you know, I would, part of it's the online, okay?
Yeah.
But I think part of it is also, you know, sometimes the technology leads us places where it's not necessarily the best for the product. And so, you know, well, in terms of, oh, look, we can have 16, we can have 32, we can have 64, we can have 130, right. You know, the scope of a lot of the online games really doesn't lead to a relationship, even if it is just a one-on-one shooter. So, like, I'm playing Words with Friends with my nephew, and if I go online and I play, you know, Battlefield 3 and he's online, it's kind of cool to see my nephew, but the game isn't designed to nurture or care about that relationship. Whereas Words with Friends, for example, or even if you go on and you play Mario Kart, I haven't played the new one on the 3DS, but on the DS, and you go online, you only have eight other people, you know, and you're able to sort of begin to, your brain is able to process the style of that driver, and this guy's always coming in first, or he's always using the red shell at this corner or whatever. And that's meat. That's mental gameplay nutrition that adds to the experience. And I think when you're online, because you have so many people, and on top of it, you've got a kind of game that really isn't about nurturing the single life experience. It's more of a meta experience.
Yeah.
It's more of ranking up and unlocking and all that. For me, anyway, personally, I feel a lot of it has to do with not just it being online and anonymous, but being just so many people, you know, that you can't really, your brain can't process relationships like that.
Looking at, like, those player progression systems in multiplayer, how much do you think they actually work and how much do they just feed into our obsessive compulsive sort of nature? Or is that one in the same?
I think it's one in the same. I mean, there's no doubt they work. I mean, there's a wonderful, I mean, like, you know, I wish I was so smart sometimes. Like, Jonathan Blow, I mean, I don't know Jonathan that well, and I doubt we'd get along because he's really fucking smart to the point that I just think, he just thinks at a different level. But he did this great talk at some university about that compulsion loop and kind of the slot machine and the Skinner box and all that. And you know, on one hand, you have to side with him and say it's you know, you're creating time wasters versus genuine nurturing entertainment. But at the same time, how much different is that than a kind of a shitty just comfort food sitcom versus a great deep television show like Game of Thrones? You know, or I was gonna say West Wing, that's my favorite show, but you know, or 6 Feet Under or whatever. So I don't know. I can tell you that I don't have, in the same way that that's why games are so fascinating and so hard, because everybody comes at it. There's a lot of different kinds of gamers. So like Diablo and World of Warcraft, even though I love the old Blizzard games when they were like Silicon and Synapse, like Rock and Roll Racing and stuff. And I think they did Blackthorn too on the Synapse.
They did.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. But I don't have that compulsion to click and level up, you know, so World of Warcraft and Diablo never worked for me, you know, in the same way that you respond to stories and games differently. I don't respond to games and stories in the same way. And so that Farmville compulsion loop for me, it doesn't appeal to me. Just like when I go online and I play a shooter, I don't give a fuck about, I mean, it's fun to level up and it's fun to see the little bar fill up and stuff. And we have that in Twisted Metal because it's 2012
we have it because it's 2012.
Well, I mean, because there's an expectation of persistence, and I can understand and appreciate the need for that meta. But again, we've put 90% of our resources into the actual moment to moment gameplay, because for us, you know, if you stripped out the meta out of Call of Duty, as brilliant as an execution piece the multiplayer is, the actual moment-to-moment is fun, but I don't think it would be able to stand on its own as a relevant game.
Yeah, you're kind of blowing my mind right now, David, because you're peeling back some of the reasons why I don't play those games for a long time. Right. Like, I have...
You're blowing my mind because you speak.
I've been processing a lot, you know. Probably not good for a podcast, but... I have played the past couple Call of Duties for a couple weeks, and like just enough to see like what is it like for me to get, you know, this gun or that gun. And it's what sucks is that I am totally sucked into, what emblem did I just unlock? Did I unlock the pot leaves? I'm going to go check it out. But then after a while, that fades. And I think some of it is what you're talking about, that having those huge numbers in a group, I just don't feel invested as a team. And that's one of the reasons I really like games like Left 4 Dead. I'll still play Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2 is because it's me and three other guys versus four other guys. And I feel like I really have to be a part of this and really be in the moment and not just like fuck around and see if I can, you know, how many, what amount of XP am I going to get at the end of this?
Well, it's interesting when you say that, because I agree, by the way. I love the Left 4 Dead series. And I, you know, and, you know, we were joking about, hey, let's talk about journalism a little bit and reviews. But, you know, I do find that it would be so great if, and from y'all's end of the conversation, there was a pushback on that. Because a lot of times there is a trumpeting of the technology, or there is a trumpeting of the number of players, or the trumpeting of the scope. And it's like, all that's great. And those things should be rewarded and expressed. And the people who make those things are fucking geniuses. And I wouldn't want to take the spotlight away from them. But at the same time, you know, I don't see a lot of what you're saying in a lot of the mainstream gaming press, where it's kind of like, yeah, it's great, but, you know, because I think there would be value for us as developers to kind of, you know, have that picked apart. And it's like, fuck, we got, you know, look, I'll tell you what, I don't know I know Amy a decent amount, Amy Henning. I mean, we're not great friends. I'm sure we would be. We just don't live in the same place, but I like her a lot. But I can't imagine the Uncharted 3 team is not taking, the wonderful, well-deserved accolades of that game and sort of bathing in them, but also the valid criticisms of that game, where there were a lot of people this time around that actually were saying, I didn't like the control being taken away from me as much. And it was rare to see a game of that caliber and that brilliantly executed caliber still sort of called out a little bit in the press. I mean, Eurogamer, I think, was really the only site that mentioned it, and they gave it a really good review, and you would have thought they would have said it's a piece of shit and they went home and killed your mother. and so I think there, but I do think in the long and medium term, there's value to the industry to have that kind of voice out there. And I don't see it enough in journalism.
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons why you don't see that very often is because people who do stick their neck out. I think that was Simon Parkin who wrote that Eurogamer review. Maybe I'm wrong, but for Uncharted. And, you know, he dogged it, and I thought that those were appropriate criticisms. I was not really that big fan of Uncharted 3. I had a great-looking game, you know, great acting, but not really my speed because of some of the narrative quirks that I have about games. And but, you know, people who do stick their neck out, they get a ton of shit for it.
What does a ton of shit translate to? I mean, he still has a job. He still has.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's.
Happy Lightsaber 3 doesn't like him. I mean, who gives a
shit?
Yeah,
angry people on the internet.
Yeah, I think, you know, some people aren't ready to deal with the pressure that, you know, negative opinion from commenters and, you know, NeoGaf who lambast you for.
You should come on this show for one episode.
Yeah. We give that game its 8 or 7 out of 10 or something like that. And that's like.
They gave it an 8.
Yeah, that's like a crucifixion as far as a lot of people in, you know, the video game enthusiast space are concerned.
Right.
Because if it's not a 9 or a 10, it's a piece of shit.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I had directed Uncharted 3, or if somebody had said God of War 1 had that issue, or if issues come to us for Twisted Metal on PS3, I guarantee you, we're going to fucking listen. And if it's, you know, in fact, Eurogamer is another one on Calling All Cars. There was, you know, we got some good reviews and we got some, you know, solid above average reviews, and we have some hardcore fans of that game. But the one review I really appreciated that was, I wouldn't call it negative, but wasn't brilliantly praised. It was, I think we got like a 6 or a 5 from Eurogamer, but the guy took the mechanics apart and said, look, this is what's wrong with this game. And I was like, thank you. That was a good lesson. Mm-hmm. He was talking about, you know, it goes so fast, and the moment to moment of protecting your car with the criminal, there's not enough fidelity and resolution in what you can do as a player that it has no choice but to sort of devolve into a game that really appeals only at a surface level. And as a designer and a guy who works on games, I was like, sweet. I appreciate that comment to the point that it did make its way into Twisted Metal in terms of some of those lessons. And I think it's a real shame that there's not more of that out there.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to see a little bit more variation in review scores. Actually, I would prefer to see fewer review scores on the internet. But, you know, this is a pretty big conversation to have.
I like review scores. I don't have a problem with
that. I'm not really a big fan. I think I'm actually less of a fan of the inane conversation that is spawned by review scores. When people think that a 6.8 for Shenmue is terrible, or an 8.8 for a Legend of Zelda game.
Or like the difference between a 73 and a 74.
You guys have really steered off into a whole other world of conversation.
Are you still here, Gar? I didn't even know you were still here.
I'm just sort of like watching you drift from Twisted Metal through the compulsion loops, and now you're into review scores.
Where I see it worse is in previews, where there's always this, oh, well, this might be fixed, and this was probably going to be better. And there's no push for previews. Like, there's such a thing as being concerned in a preview. Like, I played a preview version of this game. Here are the problems that I found with it. But a lot of the previews that I read are people saying, well, these things will probably be fixed, or the PR says that these things they're looking at. And you never express that concern to the consumer or to your reader before the game is out, of like, hey, I play this and some of this shit is fucked up and some of this shit is not working. You know, maybe not to that extreme. Yeah. I think
let me play the other side for you, though. You're looking at something that's not complete.
No, it's true. But I'm saying there's still, you could still issue concern of like, there are systems, like a gameplay, the fundamental gameplay aspects of a game, if it's the combat is not working, you can still issue those concerns to the reader. You don't have to say, well, this stuff might be fixed or probably be fixed.
Well, I think that's kind of a blanket statement. But, you know, there I have seen some, I think we're on the same email list where we talk about some of this stuff. And I have seen some people concerned about that where, you know, people talked about, I think the case in particular is Amy, that horror game that had some very strong previews because they saw a nice vertical slice of the game that looked promising. And you know, it was pitched, it was advertised to you in a way. It's like, hey, I fucking loved the Star Wars Phantom Menace trailers. I was like, this movie's going to be fucking amazing.
Right.
It's a piece of shit. And, you know, but that I have to defend myself a little bit because I have looked at games that I've been like, wow, this game is not turning out very well. Like Too Human, for example, I dogged that game in an early preview,
but
and I dogged it when I reviewed it. But
yeah, okay.
But it, you know, there are a couple games that I've looked at in my time where that preview is not positive, and I've either written not so positively about it and pointed out the flaws. Like I saw I'm Alive last week at CES, and there are a bunch of things about that game that are not quite right, but it does have some promise to it. So
hey, let me toss this on the table to sort of round things back a hair.
Yeah, where are we?
We're about to see Twisted Metal in a couple of weeks, and we're going to have it in our hands, and we're going to play it, and it's going to get reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me reviewing the game, one of the key, or probably, you know, one of the big things will be, does it give me that multiplayer experience? Like, I remember that was Twisted Metal. That is Twisted Metal for me. You know, am I going to have that moment? And or not? Or am I going to be able to get back into that groove and just kill with Scepter and be, like, having a great time and be loving it every minute of it? But there's also a single-player game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big single-player game that's a lot of time and effort has gone into it. And someone else is going to probably look at the game and say, oh, well, here's the single-player game, and then not even, you know, to a similar degree, bring the multiplayer component into it. Especially if they're not a Twisted Metal fan. They may not even have the frame of reference that I have of thinking back to, like, hanging out with Jim, hopping over the back of the couch and playing some Twisted Metal. So how do you put those things together, then, if you're looking at the game?
Well, I mean, you can't judge a couch co-op experience, you know, at a preview event, most likely. I mean, I've seen Twisted Metal. I saw Twisted Metal last year here in L.A. And
I remember what you wrote about.
I don't remember what I wrote about it.
It was a great headline. It was How I Stopped Worrying.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because you know, when you showed the Twisted Metal for the first time at E3, you showed off that nuke level, and I was like, what is this? This is insane. It's too complex. It's never going
to
work.
How'd you wind up choosing that, by the way? That was a weird choice to show off the nuke thing.
Well, it's very different from anything else that's ever been in Twisted Metal.
You mean,
game,
why did we choose to show it at E3?
Yeah.
Well, we showed straight up deathmatch, which I think was sort of the meat and potatoes. And then I think it was important to sort of show that we had evolved the rule sets, and it wasn't just going to be drive around and shoot each other. And there's only this, you know, it was that we brought a big team based element into it, and we had brought more skill and strategy and things like that. So that was the reason we wanted to make sure that was clear.
How much does push to, like, add other things into Twisted Metal ever become a distraction? Because, like, you know what? Driving around shooting people is kind of Twisted Metal to me. I want that part.
I mean, you know, at first, you know, Sony was the one that came to us and said, hey, we'd really like to get a single player in here, because we wanted it to be like Warhawk was and Socom Confrontation in terms of a $39 Blu-ray that was, or download. And we were like, guys, the thing is, A, the team's not that big, and honestly, I mean, it's a wonderful team, but it's kind of like anything else. I mean, you go to Tom Cruise because you want a Tom Cruise kind of character in the movie. You don't go to Tom Cruise because you want someone to play Macbeth, right? And so I think with the guys in Utah, they're fantastic with mechanics-based games, and they're fantastic with gameplay games. But I was like, you know, we're not the right studio if you want to take Twisted Metal single player into the world of Grand Theft Auto and get into story and depth. It's not what we do right now, you know? And so we were pretty adamant, and Sony was cool with it, to their credit. They were like, no, we want it to be car combat. We want it to be what Twisted Metal is. And again, that's why I'm real satisfied with it, because it is, you always want to hit, right? You want to hit. Hits are great, man. So I don't want to act like, oh, fuck it, I don't give a shit. I'd love a hit. I'd love to walk into GameStop and go, oh, you sold out your first day. That's sweet. But, you know, it is Twisted Metal, and we love Twisted Metal. We love the series. We love the world, and we've evolved it. But, you know, we didn't want to put all that one-player stuff in it. We have – the one-player is much deeper and more varied than it's ever been. The bosses are really cool. I love the stories. I love the fiction.
And you have cool characters. I mean, look, yeah. Twisted Metal has always been about these really cool characters. It's just that they were sort of the contestants. Yeah. Well, not sort of. They were the contestants in the match.
That's right. That's right.
To give it personality.
Yeah. And you know, we this time, you know, we shot live action, which for the longest time we thought, oh, we're fucked, you know. And then Sony does this thing where, you know, I think every publisher does, where you go out and get like mock reviews before the game comes out to get an idea of, okay, are your projections correct and stuff. And I was so thrilled. I was just like, you know, when it came back and Every there was like top five things, and consistently they were like, oh, the cutscenes. Even though I don't like telling stories in cutscenes, but this really was never meant to be a story based game, and we knew we had to have stories in there. The characters in the world is great, but yeah, I mean, it is it's primarily multiplayer. When you talk about how that's going to be reviewed, I don't know. It's so hard these days, right? Because if you look at something like I got so much shit a couple of weeks ago because I tweeted. I said, well, you know, if you're buying Twisted just for the single player, you know, you might want to rent it first, you know, and people were thinking I was like, oh, my God. And I was like, I wasn't. It's the best single we've ever done. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, if I were to say to you, like Uncharted 3, don't you think most people who are going to buy Uncharted 3, you know, they're going to buy it for the campaign and the story and the world, and the multiplayer is great. But if you're just in the market for a great multiplayer game, not to say that Uncharted 3 is not a great multiplayer game, but you're probably going to go for something different as your
staple.
Right.
Yeah.
All I was trying to do was to communicate what was in that box. If you're going to spend $60, it's like you're going to get a great – if you love single-player Twisted Metal, best it's ever been. You're not going to get Skyrim. And I kind of bum me that I got shit for that. I'm like, guys, let's fucking win because we win. You know, let's sell because we're worth selling. Let's not fucking win just because, you know, we were able to kind of misdirect. Not that anybody was suggesting we do that.
Yeah.
But to mention that, it's like it's just fucking the truth. And I'll stand naked on a pile of Twisted Metals. Not that anybody wants to see that, but I would do it because that's how proud I am of the game and of Sony and Indie Beat Sleep Play. But I think we need to call it what it is, which is it's the best Twisted we've ever made, but it's Twisted Metal single player. So know what you're getting.
Do you think that there might be a perception or maybe a fear that some reviewers might just, or even fans of the series might look at that single player as just the tutorial for what the multiplayer is? From a design standpoint, does that come in? Like, you show them these game systems so when they get to the multiplayer, they know exactly
how
everything works?
Well, the bread and butter of the series has always been multiplayer in regards to that's where people spend the most time, you know? And certainly if you play the single player first, you're going to be better versed to get online or split screen, and you're going to be able to unlock some things that you can only unlock in the single player. But, you know, like I said, I mean, if they feel that way today, you know, it's if you've played Twisted Metal before, it's still single player. It's that, but a lot more variety. It's not just deathmatch after deathmatch after deathmatch, and then you see an ending. There's more stuff you can do.
Okay.
We've got battle races. We've got really much huge epic bosses that take a long time to take down. We've got levels with like these really cool semi trucks that spawn other cars on the battlefield. So it's still car combat. You still have to kill all the enemies to win.
Mm-hmm.
But every X seconds, these semis will sort of open up the back door and sort of poop out another car onto the battlefield. So not only are you having to take care of the cars that are out there, but you're having to constantly track the time of these one or two semis that are sort of, you know, dumping cars into the battle. So there's definitely more, you know, we've got this thing called Red Ring, which is like the battlefield constantly. If you get outside the Red Ring, you have like a, yeah, I didn't mean, yeah, we don't actually call it Red Ring. That's what we were calling it in development, was Red Ring of Death, but not, that's not what it's called in the game. I think it's called like Electric Cage or something, but it's basically this cage that chops up the level with this kind of, you know, these lasers, mm-hmm. and it moves around the level. And so you're still doing car combat, but you only got like 60 seconds that you
can survive. Within.
Oh, that's
right. And you can
cool.
get out. So if you see the hell semi racing by and you're like, fuck it, you know, I only have 20 seconds left in my grace period, but I need some health, I'm going to risk getting outside of the electric ring to get that and then get back in. And, it, you know, so we're definitely doing more than we've ever done with the single player. But, you know, if somebody comes to it and says, where's my big epic adventure? It's like, you didn't fucking, that's why a preview's good.
Yeah.
Because that's not what it is, you know?
The thing that I think is interesting, because you were talking about narrative, but I remember when you guys revealed some of the returning characters, the response from fans. So even though it's not this narrative-driven franchise, people do have those, you know, they do have fond memories of certain characters. And when you introduce those back into this game, I know a lot of the fans of the series are really excited about those returns.
Oh, absolutely. And to the point that, like I said, one of the reasons I'm really glad that the movie, again, I don't know what reviewers are going to say about the movies. I mean, that's why you do a mock review, because they say that they're in a really good, they're saying the guys we used are like within 3 points of Metacritic in terms of accuracy. So who's to say? We'll find out. It'll be interesting to see. But, you know, if everybody responds, or a lot of people respond as positively as this individual did, and some of the people that they had judging it, I keep saying I hope Sony's paying attention, because I want to do more with them. I've been saying I want to convince somebody at Sony to give us like $1.5 million and just go make like a slasher movie with Sweet Tooth just for PSN and make it really low budget and make it real violent, make it real hardcore, kind of like what Kevin Smith did with Red State, right? And just kind of just push it. And, you know, you launch it on PSN exclusive and then eventually you put it up on Blu-ray. But, you know, I love the world. I love the world of Twisted Metal. Mm-hmm. And in fact, God of War, before we greenlit God of War, we were in discussions at Sony Santa Monica. One of the launch games instead of God of War was going to be this kind of cross between, it was going to be Silent Hill existing. It was basically a Silent Hill kind of game in the Twisted Metal universe. And so it was going to get a lot more into that world, which I think is just really cool. So,
yeah.
Well, in terms of these multiplayer, I feel like you have some parallels to like Mortal Kombat.
Absolutely.
And yeah. that, you know, you have primarily been this multiplayer kind of couch based kind of competitive kind of game. But those guys really pushed a really interesting single player game into their what they did last year.
Right.
And like, they can make the same argument. Like, if you're just buying Mortal Kombat for the single player game, rent it, because.
Yeah. And one of my favorite games last year was Mortal Kombat. And like, it's not a knock on the game. It's just, anyway, I'm real self-conscious, because I hated that I got shit for it, because I think people thought I was bad mouthing a game that I've given 3 years of my life to, and this team has worked their asses off for, and that wasn't the case. But yeah, you're right. Mortal Kombat's a great comparison.
Yeah. Did you look at what they did at all, or did you, I don't know. I feel like that kind of maybe it benefits you a little bit that they had that response to their title.
Well, I loved the new Mortal Kombat. I don't know how deep I got into it. I went almost all the way through the story mode, which to me was still, it was pretty much just my, there may have been stuff I didn't see, but what I saw on the single player was, you know, one-on-one fights, and then they were bridged together by really cool storytelling.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, was there something else to the single player?
No, it was just the way that they kind of, you know, retconned a little bit some of the narrative there.
Right.
So you learn how two of the guys became cyborgs, for example.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah,
it,
yeah.
It was kind of a neat like retelling of that story.
Yes. No, I see parallels there, and hopefully we'll have as much, you know, fan love and new love as this is the new Mortal Kombat. Yeah. It's a great game.
Since we went a little afield, why don't we carry this over in the next segment? We'll regroup a little bit, come back, talk some more about Twisted Metal, and then get into news and some of your comments from last week's show. Stick around. Weekend Confirmed. We'll be right back.
Oh, the things we get into during the breaks. If only you knew. And actually, thank goodness that you probably don't.
Yeah.
So following up on the Twisted Metal stuff, a couple of questions that I had sort of queued up for myself that I was curious about. Number one, we were talking there about car combat, and you're talking about all these ideas you guys have. And so obviously there was plenty of room for innovation in car combat games. But what the hell happened? There was a heyday for car combat games. And then since they fell off the map, they fell off the map.
Yeah.
And what do you think happened when you guys looked at it?
You know, I think a lot of it was or is that Twisted Metal 1 and 2 really was at the very beginning of 3D console gaming.
Yeah.
So the concept, I mean, I remember when we were designing the first game, and I'm like, every week I would read the magazines. I'm like, nobody better fucking do a 3D environment where you're driving around in a car, because no one had done that, right? And suddenly I saw this ad for... Jaguar had a game out called Club Drive, I think is what it was called. And I'm like, those fuckers, because you could actually drive around in 3D space in a car. And that's how, it sounds absurd, but that's how new that concept was. So I think a lot of the success, we happen to have benefited, because I do believe the first game and certainly the second were genuinely good games and well-made games. But we benefited a lot from the novelty, I think, of, holy shit, I'm driving off a track for the first time. And after that, there were so many other things that filled in that novelty space. And that's one of the things I have issues with games, is so much of what we love about today's flavor of the day or flavor of the month is still the sheer novelty of the newness and not those core underlying mechanics that make it a great experience. And what was cool about Twisted, especially Twisted 2, was there was always this kind of group of fans that were able to see, not that a lot of it was not intentional, a lot of it was accidental, but some of it was intentional, but they were able to see beyond the kind of novel fantasy of it and genuinely like sort of the very high speed, I don't want to call it a chess match because that sounds really pretentious, but more like an advanced checkers match. You know, it was a deeper experience than I think a lot of people gave it credit for. And so because so many other people who had kind of made some money off car combat and moved on, hey, now you can get out of the car, now you can fly, now you can do this, they weren't really ever interested specifically in the mechanics. They're just like, well, why would I just do car combat now? Now I can get out and do this and do this. We were still fascinated by kind of the Mario Kart battle mode aspect of it that we felt and feel with the new one. We've kind of hit the best we've ever done, that there is a lot of strategy and tactics and depth that happens at those really fast speeds and in these big levels. And when you have vehicles that have really high hit points, so you can sustain yourself.
So that's one of the things that's cool about autos, is it makes sense that you could take a lot of damage in them. And so it's not a Modern Warfare 3 sort of, oh, I just got plunked and I'm dead and I'm respawning.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right.
And it gives you a lot of gradation, because you can have like the small, lightly armored thing all the way up to the super heavy, very armored, very, very durable sort of.
And everything in between. I mean, there's so many wonderful variables that the programmers at Eat Sleep Play have given us to play with, in terms of it's not, the basics. Yeah, it's armor and it's speed and it's handling, but it's how fast this guy is able to sort of pound his buttons out of an EMP blast. Or we have a car in the game Kamikaze, and it's like, he's a great car, but we need to figure out a way to differentiate him and make him special. It's like, we have these advanced mines that are really powerful that you unlock as you rank up. And again, none of the rank up things, that was another big thing for us. We didn't want anything to be better than anything else. So you can unlock and choose to use that mine, but it's only better in hit points. It costs more energy to use. So it's not like, okay, I'm going to use this and never go back to the basic mines. But anyway, so Kamikaze's use of those mines, he can drop like 8 or 9 of those, compared to most cars that only have enough energy to drop 3 of them, right? So it's all of this nuance that I don't know, part of me is almost like, we're putting together this thing called Twisted Metal University, which are these really in-depth videos for the Twisted Metal site, to really make it clear to players before they buy the game, and frankly, I'm not going to lie, reviewers too, if they want to go there and go, okay, we hear Jaffe talk a lot about, the depth and nuance, blah, 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 but when you first step into the world of Twisted Metal, it's just fast and there's a lot of shit blowing up, and you don't really see that. Some people will never see that. That's not a criticism of them. It's just that's just not what they like, or it moves too fast. They don't want to pay any attention to that. But that stuff's there too. And so I think we've hung on to car combat because it's just the franchise that allows us to make this kind of multiplayer game. But I think a lot of, it's a long answer, but a lot of the reasons most people have walked away from it is there's no need for just vehicle combat. And we see a very exciting niche because of all these things that we can do that's different in multiplayer. But a lot of people just say, well, no, I'll get out of the car now and have planes and trucks and helicopters and sniper rifles while walking around.
And there's a lot to learn, though, to make it good, because then you get into why do you have the accelerator here and why do you have the triggers the way they're worked out? It's because it becomes very much more about the combat.
It's
and
a shooter, I mean, we have traditional controls in Twisted for sure, and we debated that for a long time because everybody now picks it up and they expect to have gas and brake and stuff up here on the shoulder buttons. And we have that as a setting, but it's not the default setting because the truth is it's a shooter. And you know what? I'll tell you what. I don't know what people will think, but when the game comes out, but I hope at least they'll say, you know what, I like this game, I don't like this game, they succeeded here, they failed here, but these guys were, you know, Sony was willing to give them the freedom in this incredibly expensive medium these days, and Eat Sleep Play was willing to say, you know what, we know what's popular and we know what the thing to do is, but this is what we really love, and it may be your cup of tea, it may not be your cup of tea, but I hope at least people recognize that, you know, we made decisions because we felt they were exciting and they came from a place of passion and gameplay.
Okay, so rather than just say, oh, it's got, like you said, oh, it's got nuances, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
What do you think are the nuances that pick up out of Twisted Metal that I'm sitting down to play the first time? Give me a couple of cars, a couple of things I ought to be playing with, and what's going to be cool about it?
Well, I don't know what you'll pick up on immediately. I mean, I imagine your first blush is going to be, it's fast, there's a lot of cool destruction, it feels satisfying to blow someone up. You know, I love the variety of cars, the levels are great. I love the levels because they're so different in terms of every level map is really designed, whether it's fighting on rooftops or whether it's fighting on canyon roads where you can kind of ram people off or suck people up on your magnet and then shoot them off the magnet. And then lots of shortcuts and rhythm sections and tracks that you can find only by kind of, you know, really mastering the map. But the nuance and depth I'm talking about is stuff like the remote bomb weapon, for example. So we have this remote bomb that we've had since Twisted Metal 2, and you basically drop it anywhere in the level and you detonate it. Big deal. But with this new one, all the weapons have so much more functionality. So, like, you can take that weapon and you can shoot it at a car, and it'll stick on a car. And if it sticks in the car and you let it cook long enough, it'll do more damage the longer it cooks. That guy who has it stuck on him, if he rams an enemy fast enough, he can transfer it to him, but he's got to basically have sort of a six-axis ram. He has to have enough turbo to be going that fast to dislodge the bomb. If you detonate it, if I stick it on you and I detonate it, I'm still going to take splash damage. So suddenly you can still counter the fact that you've got it on you by sticking close to me and you're going to take damage. On top of that, you can say, or you can realize, you know what, if I take this remote bomb and stick it on an enemy, depending on where it's cooked, it's going to be between 30 and 50 points of damage. But if I realize I can stick this in the environment, either stick it on a wall or stick it around a corner, you're going to end up doing probably 2 times the amount of damage. So 100 hit points if it's stuck in the environment versus stuck on a car, which motivates players who are good to start going, you know what, I'm going to set up ambushes. I'm going to plant this on a wall in an alleyway, and then I'm going to run around the corner and I'm going to make these people think, oh shit, you saw me, and now I'm going to race to try to avoid you as you come to chase me thinking you're going to kill me, and I'm going to lead you into this alleyway and I'm going to detonate this fully cooked bomb that does 2 times the damage that it would do if it was stuck to your car.
Because you had time to cook it.
Exactly. And it's also stuck in the level. Or if you take the shotgun, everybody knows the closer you get, the more damage it does. But if you actually can get the shotgun aimed at the driver's windshield, just that little window, you're getting a point blank shot that does 60 points of damage. So there's all the weapons, whether it's the specials, and every car has 2 specials, whether it's all that stuff we were talking about, like Kamikaze can drop more of the advanced mines than, say, Death Warrant, or whether it's the actual pickups, or whether it's the level. I mean, it's just, I'm so excited about this game, because it's like, whether it's the level designs themselves and going, hey, you know what, Roadboat, which has the magnet on his car that can pick guys up and then charge them and shoot them into other cars or throw them off levels, he's really good to play in certain levels versus he's not so good to play in big open levels where you have nothing to ram him into or shoot them off of. But it's also the modes, right? I mean, we have this mode Nuke, which is very team-centric. I mean, it's certainly not Team Fortress 2, but it's definitely a class-based mode. And you basically say, hey, I'm going to pick Kamikaze for this mode because his secondary is a 360-degree EMP blast. So as your enemy is trying to hack the Nuke missile and launch a missile, he's a great car to have in there playing defense. But he may not be as good in, say, Last Team Standing. So it's just all – there's so – people go, wow, you spent 3 years on a Twisted Metal game. What did you do? And it's like, dude, when I was in school, when I was in college at USC, his name was Randall Kleiser. It was a film director who made the movie Grease, right?
Okay.
I'm 40 now, so Grease came out and it was a big fucking hit. And people are like, fucking Grease, what's wrong? Are you fucking Rip Van Winkle, right? Yeah, I don't know how old your listeners are. But anyway, point is, is he was talking
they
about...
They hear it from me all the time. I'm over there.
Yeah,
over
you know. But he also made Flight of the Navigator, which maybe these little, you know. But anyway, point is, he made this movie, huge hit. And they ask him, they said, well, how did you get all this freedom? He says, you know what? Nobody expected this game to be a hit, or sorry, this movie to be a hit. And they just left us alone because that movie, their big movie was Urban Cowboy or some such. I don't know what it was.
Right.
And they got to go off and do their shit. And so for us, people say, wow, you've been 3 years on a Twisted Metal game. What have you guys been doing? And it's like all of this under the hood shit that may not be immediately apparent to somebody picking it up in the first day or the first hour. And again, that's why we did the website, to go, look, you know, you may not get this right up front, but this is here. This stuff is here. We were just so fortunate that Sony said, yeah, take the time and build it and see what happens, you know?
How much does it worry you, though, that you have to have a... I mean, not everybody's going to know to go to Twisted Metal U. That's like, what? It's great sitting here and having you explain to me all the shit I can do with this one weapon.
Yep.
How do I figure that out in the game?
Well, it's a couple things. One is... you know, you always have to design for the shallow end of the pool, and you have to design for the deep end of the pool. And Twisted Metal has a really deep pool, but it also has a great shallow, because if you go to PAX or if you go to E3, and I know, you know, obviously you guys go, excuse me, I got a burp coming, and I'm just kind of waiting for it. It's kind of cooking. It's kind of prepping.
If you plant it on the wall, it
smells worse.
Damage.
Yeah.
Get more damage.
So if you go to all those shows where we've had it, you know, it's been great for us to see, because it means for us what we take away from those shows, because we've gotten a lot of great response from most of those shows, is that the shallow end of the pool is alive and well and it's working. People like the destruction. They like to pick it up. They like to shoot shit. They
fly around, use your basic guns.
Yeah, and you can still have that relationship. You can still have chases. You know, when you have the health semi racing by, it's like, oh shit, get the health semi, you know, because you're going to fill up your health and all that. You understand how to play Nuke enough that you can kind of, it's fun to grab the faction leader, drag him behind your car, leaving blood streaks, and throw him into a meat grinder to fly a missile. You know, so the hope is that we get you in with that. We get you in with kind of the fun stuff, or the surface fun stuff. And then when you go online, you start to see other people doing these things, and you're like, how the fuck did that guy just do that?
Okay.
And so, but it's like, you know, it's like a fighting game. I mean, it's, there's a lot of, you know, you look at the manual for Marvel Capcom 3 and it's like, I think they're not telling you fucking everything. There's so much nuance.
I like that. I think they're not telling me everything.
No.
What the hell's going on here?
Right, right. And I love Mortal Kombat more than the Street Fighter games, even though I fully understand that Street Fighter and Virtua Fighter are such deeper games. But for that reason alone, I've never been able to penetrate sort of the depth of those fighting games to the point that I can enjoy them. So as much as I love, like, I'll play Marvel Capcom with my 6-year-old, and I can hang there, but I can't play it with normal players because it's just too much for me. And so the hope is our shallow end of the pool works more like Mortal Kombat shallow end of the pool, where people can just play it and have a good time. But there's a lot more under the hood.
So famously, Jeff Cannata, little disappointed.
He's a dick.
He's not here today.
What the fuck's he shooting? He's shooting some production I heard on your thing last week. What's he doing?
He's in a play, actually.
Oh, that's manly. Great. What's he doing? I'm just giving him shit. I don't know. I was hoping you would be here because I know he kind of rips on Twisted sometimes.
Well, so, and reason he ripped on it, I mean, I think his fundamental complaints, not to like put words in his mouth, but I think they will all reflected a lot of the touchback to the old school nature of the game.
Right.
And, you know, this is something that some of the folks on Shaq brought up as well. Like, where was the one? Improbable Jay. So he's like, he compared it to almost, or he didn't compare it to almost, he compared it to like a Duke Nukem Forever, because that's a game where, you know, we were constantly touted about having this throwback charm and being, you know, like reflective of all those great times you had playing Duke Nukem back in the day. But for him, it was more just a game that came out way too late for its time.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you guys worry about that part, and how do you balance out that, like, I want to go get the old school part, but it's got to be modern?
I mean, I'm aware of it, like, and I have an aware. The only thing I care about is, and I've said this before in the press, I mean, I'm a huge Spielberg fan, mostly from childhood. You know, I thought Tintin was abysmal, other than a couple of. I thought there were two.
Really?
Did you see it?
Yeah.
The shot down the mountain, fucking brilliant. Fucking amazing, right? When they had the chase scene down the mountain, and the scenes with the cranes, holy shit. So there were moments that you're like, okay, that shows you why, you know, motion, and I ain't going to call it, you know, what do they call it? Production capture or perform. Fuck you. It's motion capture. And we fucking invented it in our motherfucking industry. And you don't get to co-opt it and now call it performance capture. It's motion capture, cocksucker. But the point is that you definitely watch that and you go, that's what that medium can do really well.
Right.
But the story was horrible, and Tintin was creepy. And I like Tintin, the comic character, but he looks like a little boy. He sounds like a man. He lives alone in this apartment with his dog. And I'm not trying to be silly. It's just like, you just felt weird. It's like, is he a boy? Is he? And it's like, you didn't care about the characters. It wasn't like there was enough about Tintin as a human that you were like, okay, I'm into this guy. I want to see him succeed.
I will definitely agree with you that part of it, they did not build the bridge with the character as well as a live acted motion right. picture typically does.
And that's okay if you can fill in the blanks with amazing action scenes, and they did with two, but the rest of them weren't that special. But to me, anyway, point is, so Crystal Skull knocked me out flat because I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan. Indy's my favorite movie, the first one of all time, and I thought Crystal Skull was almost like, just what the fuck? I mean, not just like, oh, it wasn't that great. It was like, what the fuck?
You weren't alone
is this? It was horrific, right? And so with Twisted, I do, the only thing I worry about, back to your question ages ago, I worry about fans who are only interested because they want to recapture those times. And so I'm not consciously sitting there going, let's do a throwback. And I'm not saying Duke Nukem was or wasn't. I don't know much of the history
right.
of that. But for us, we made this because we love this, because this is the game we wanted to make, and Sony allowed us to make it the way we wanted to make it. And they contributed a lot. I mean, Sony's always a great partner, the guys in Santa Monica.
I just think that, like, one of the things Jeff brought up is that there's this, and I think that reflects an expectation that's developed from playing the ever increasingly sophisticated games out there, is mm-hmm. that he played Twisted Metal, and he's like, wait, there's no physics modeling on the cars like mm-hmm. I'm accustomed to. It's not giving me Forza level of I'm right. feeling all these elements, but that's not a Twisted Metal thing.
I've said this before too, every Twisted we've ever made, it's usually we get new technology. So it's like, oh, that we've had this fantasy since the first one in 94. Now we can, you know, express it better. Every single time we do one, we put better physics in and we rip them out every single fucking time. We get all excited and we say, oh, we're going to, let me give you just a very specific, right? So our physics in Twisted Metal, in a lot of ways, how do I express this? All we have to do to make you feel as a player that our physics are 25% more realistic is when that car rotates around doing a tight turn, all we have to do, and we have a tweak in there right now, if I see you at some event before we launch the game, I'll show you the tweak, is we decouple the camera. So as the car rotates around, the camera, like in, say, Burnout, hangs back. And then you basically are able to kind of see the bouncing that we have in the car. You can see the shocks. You can see the weight of the car shift from the front to the back. And then it rotates around, and you're looking at the nose of the car, the front of the car, for a couple seconds. And then the camera kind of reorients, right? That's what Burnout does. That's what a lot of mm-hmm. arcade racers do. You know what? No. We could do that and get your fucking, what's the guy's name? The guy who's gonna play? Whatever that guy. Yeah, great. So here's another couple fucking review points. But you know what? What's gonna happen if I'm chasing you and you're shooting a missile at me and I flip around to hit a shield or launch a weapon that only shoots that way? Like, I can't rear fire all my weapons, and that's
right, right, right.
Because we want to motivate you to flip around 180 and drive backwards and fire and then flip around in 180 and keep going. Well, if we use a camera that shows off the physics are better than what you might perceive them, suddenly you're looking at the nose of your car, the front of your car, and you can't see you coming in. It's almost like, yeah, I could give you a more dramatic version of Mortal Kombat. You know, in fact, they've done it, right? When they zoom in during gameplay, not like the new thing with the bones and it's at the end, but during gameplay, it's like, it might be dramatic, but you don't want to fucking have that get in the way of your moment of fighting. And so some of it, or actually all of it, is intentional in the sense, the same thing as when you drive a real car, 0 to 60 takes a long time depending on the car you're driving. But even if you're driving a high-end sports car, it takes time. So imagine, Twisted Metal is like fighter jets, right? So if that's why we have a pickup game. Your offense, you're either both on offense, or one of you is on offense, one of you is on defense, or one of you is out collecting. It's kind of, those are the four loops that are consistently going in the player's brain. A lot of times you're both on offense, and a lot of times what that means is jousting. You know, three or four joust, and then someone breaks off because something has occurred.
I need to go recharge. I need to
get some
health.
You've run out of ammo, or oh shit, there goes the health is regenerated. I see it on the map. Fuck it, I could stay here, but I'm gonna make a mental decision. And that's what I love about gameplay is, you know, Sid Meier's got that great quote that, you know, a game is a series of interesting choices. And that is why gameplay is brilliant, because I'm not saying Twisted Metal is brilliant, but I love that moment in a game where it's like, holy shit, I can stay here. I've got one power missile left. It doesn't home. I could take him out with this, but I just saw on my radar that that health at the top of the church has just respawned. Fuck, what do I do, right? So, but anyway, you rotate around, you joust three or four times. If we do realistic acceleration, which is going to make you go, oh, you get your checkpoint for your physics. Nice job, motherfucker. You know, if we do that, what is that like? You rotate around, you know, 180, and then you're back at zero.
Blood off all your speed.
And then it's like, and it's, oh, it's a fucking abysmal play experience. And so I get, though, that it is our responsibility that a reviewer would say, well, you know what, Jaffe, I get all that. You're right. Then don't fucking make them cars, because there's this cognitive dissonance that happens that a lot of people talk about in shooters, where you know, physics have evolved enough that you've created a problem or this kind of gameplay uncanny valley where we get why your gameplay works with the physics you've chosen. And those are all rational, correct reasons, but then you shouldn't make them cars because we bring to the table certain expectations. And I think that's, if somebody criticizes the physics and at that level, I'd say, yeah, you're right. That's a really good point. And either in future Twisted Metals, we either have to solve it or go, yeah, we just don't care because it's worth it. And in this case, we rolled the dice and said, we're going to get dinged for it a little bit, but it's worth it. Just like we're going to get dinged for the fact that we don't have Uncharted 3 graphics, not because our guys aren't capable, because Scott and I were like, dude, we want a fucking helicopter and we want to be able to go 200 miles an hour and we want to be able to rise in a helicopter, or we want to be able to fly in Sweet Tooth Robot at any level, any part of the level. And we want to be able to see the whole level from any other part of the level, because if you're up in the hills across the level, I want to use my sniper rifle and I want to be able to take you out. And I want you to be able to see that you're hit with a sniper scope, because you've got like 10 seconds to avoid it. There's no one hit kills in this game. So all of these are choices, and every choice you make, you know, and that's, God, that, you know, I want a reviewer who's kind of like, you know what, we're about the gameplay, motherfucker. Cause it's like every choice that you make, something else gets whittled away. Right. But so much these days, it's all about, frankly, the presentation, and that carries so much weight. And I get it. We're visual. I get it. God, I'm talking a lot. I can't help it. I get excited about this shit. But,
no,
that's
why you're here.
But I mean, but at the same time, it's like, you know, we're not idiots. It's Sony. It's PlayStation 3. These guys are amazing graphic artists. They're amazing graphic engines. It's running super fast. It's just that, you know, we wanted to put gameplay first, and it came at the cost of certain other things like realistic physics. And I don't want to be forgiven for that by reviewers or gamers who feel for them those are more important things. I respect that. I think that's great. But I, at least, again, it goes back to that thing that at least I want people to kind of go, these were conscious choices, and we made our bed, which was the gameplay bed.
You know, I'm wondering that this question that you brought up, this Improbable Jay guy, where he's talking, I don't know if he's talking about, you know, gameplay mechanics or something, right, like that. I think maybe he's talking about aesthetics. And, you know, you're...
Where's, I'm looking at...
Wait, this is... he's talking about Duke Nukem Forever.
Throwback charm. Gotcha.
Because he's you know, that's a game that references a character that's 15 years old.
Yeah.
Right? And so you guys are kind of working with characters, and the aesthetic has changed over the years, because it used to be a lot more cartoonish. And then you hit black and it became, like, very kind of gritty and grisly. But did you guys think about kind of redesigning some of those characters in a different, I don't know, more modern way? I know you have, and some of those characters are really different looking now,
to
like
an
Sweet
extent,
Tooth.
I mean, to an extent. I mean, honestly, that part of it, I don't think we thought, hey, this will be throwback charm. I think it was just more of a, I don't want to say this. How do I say this? I don't mean like, we just want to go back to days when games were fun. I'm not pitching that line. I'm not saying that. I like the games have evolved. I like that a lot when it comes to presentation and characters and things like that. But at the same time, though, I do like about Twisted Metal that, you know, it's not that it's silly. The characters in the game take their universe very seriously, and it's a story that's very dramatic for them. But, you know, I guess that it was more of a semi-conscious response to everything being so serious and artistic and meaningful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as I like Cliff Bleszinski and love the Gears of War series, it's like, you know what? I don't want to do a commercial with Mad World. You know, I don't want to try to, I love that commercial and I love that series, but I wanted to,
you're
know,
the rare exception for the, for the company. That,
you didn't like Gears?
No. I mean, like the person who doesn't want to advertise their game using Mad World. Cause that's been like, that's become such a
fucking
cliche.
I hate it. I hated the Dead Island. Not because I hated the commercial, but because I hated that it wasn't reflective of what I was actually getting in the box. It's like, if I'm going to buy Gears of War and it's going to make me feel like Mad World commercial, awesome. I'm there.
I can, but I can see how they think that that music matches with some of the storytelling that they want.
Maybe they're
like
cinematics,
some
but not the game. I had the same thing when Halo put out that commercial with the old veteran looking at the thing, and I got shit on the internet for it. But I'm like, I like Halo a lot, but don't fucking tell me. Medal of Honor, I got a buddy who was one of the designers over there in some of the earlier games. I love the Medal of Honor series, especially the early ones. But it's like you listen to those guys talk sometimes, and it's this big earnest thing about, you know, it's like, really? It's like if you genuinely are trying to create a game that, you know, and again, I'm a Medal of Honor fan, so I'm not, I liked the new one. A lot of people didn't like the new one. I enjoyed it. But if you're really trying to create a game that is speaking to that sensibility and that sort of Saving Private Ryan, war is tragic and it was important for us to do, and all these heavy messages, then you need to put it in your game, but don't kind of piggyback on the sort of surface. I don't like that, and I hate that shit. But anyway, so for Twisted, I think there was maybe me and Scott and the team kind of going, you know, we want to plant a little bit of a flag and not so conscious, and just kind of go, you know, this is just fucking fun, you know, and it's a fun world, and everything doesn't have to be like, I am a military soldier. Not that it's all military, but it's like, we don't want to be a blockbuster movie, and I don't know. I don't know what we were railing against something, but I can't articulate it.
Well, I think there are a lot of things you could have fallen into. Like, you could have fallen into that Mad World thing, and then you could have fallen into, like, you know, that grindhousey kind of style, which House of the Dead did. But I think they did pretty well, actually. And, you know, Shadows of the Damned got a little bit of that, too. But how did you kind of approach? Because I've seen your live action stuff.
Yeah.
Where did you get some of that from?
In terms of the stories or the presentation?
Presentation.
Well, I mean, honestly, it started, I was at the movies and I saw the G.I. Joe, the first G.I. Joe standees that had like Baroness, like whatever her name is, and it was clear, a real nice Photoshop photo of her, and then clearly a CG background. And so I went to Sony and I said, hey, can we do that? And they were like, let's do that, and then let's do it like Watchmen, so it won't just be stills. Because I was really sick of the motion comic stuff. I mean, we had really done one of the first games with motion comics back in Twisted Metal 2. And then I thought Infamous 2 really kind of, it's like, you know what, sure, someone can do it better, but they're top of the heap there. Naughty Dog and Blizzard are kind of top of the heap when it comes to CG. So I was like, you know, both of those places are kind of owned, and I wanted to kind of find a style that was unique. And so we were going to do kind of motion comics, but with photography is where it started. Mm. And then Sony said, hey, well, if we're going to be shooting these actors and getting costumes anyway, maybe we do it more like Watchmen, you know, and it's more like real slow motion. And then, you know, I got a little carried away, because I'm like, well, if I'm going to have live actors anyway, let's fucking write dialogue. And suddenly it became a movie, and that didn't work. And there's probably an hour's worth of footage of other stories that we shot and abandoned because it was just too cheesy to actually have these characters engaged in a real conversation. It's like, if you don't have the budget to make a comic book movie, don't fucking make a comic book. So we kind of ended up eventually finding a style that was not so Watchmen, but it was a little just more told visually with a lot of voiceover and music cues and stuff. And, you know, we'll see if it works. Like I said, I've been really happy with the response so far, but I'm sure there are going to be some people say, oh, it's fucking cheesy, you know, so I don't know how it's going to go.
You ever going to let fans take a look at that stuff that you cut out?
I will, and I want to. I want to let the game I want to get the fiction out there for the people who care about it and go, okay, that's the official, that's the story.
Right.
And, you know, down the line, I'd love to say, hey, by the way, on the blog or whatever, here's some stuff that we shot that we didn't use.
That'd be cool.
Use, so.
All right. Well, we still have one more segment to lay down. We're not going to shoot it, but we're going to lay it down. We'll do that right when we come back. We've got news. We could talk about games. We play. We got too much to cram into one segment. So Zav and I will figure out what that's going to be. If you stick around and come back, you'll get to hear the results.
Thanks for joining us on Weekend Confirmed. Yielding two daggers. Casting fireball spells. Bad people. You're doing badass killing. Bad people. Turns out when bad people are killing you in a role-playing game, you know what you're supposed to be doing. Wielding two daggers. Bad people. Casting fireball spells. It'll be you. Okay, I gotta interrupt. Since you're a badass, I
love we can confirm. Badass bitch.
Dave is starting now turn the game music into electro techno and then dropping Ken Ralston in there. I mean, wow, it's all over the place, Dave. Well done, sir. All right, so we were having a little discussion about what to talk about here. One thing is Michael and I were at this, and if you happen to be in the Los Angeles area, you can come out and take advantage of this for the next month as well.
I didn't realize what was going
on.
That's
actually like a thing. It's like
I didn't know. They have those Vita Social Club.
It's the Vita Social Club. It's on Main Street in Santa Monica. But we got an opening early night thing to go check out. And when you checked out some games, I played FIFA, which I'm sort of torn by because the Vita definitely gives them the ability to do real FIFA on a handheld even better than the PSP did. It's just that it's like you're watching an ant farm. Characters on them are so, I mean, they're all, and if you look, if you stop and pay attention, they're animating everything and they still have the ball physics and everything's great, except he's really, really freaking teeny. So I don't know if that gets into that question about what do you want for a handheld game?
Yeah.
And it's nice that they can recreate it. They do. I have big hands, so some of the stuff that they're doing that's innovative is not conducive ergonomically for me and the PSP. So for instance, one of the things they did that's really cool is that the back touch sensor equates to the goal in the soccer pitch. And you can, instead of using the buttons and stick to shoot your goal, tap on the back of the screen where you want to aim the shot. And then you can hold it to vary the power. So this is new for FIFA because the way it used to work is, you know, you hold down the button to shoot, and as you hold down the button to shoot, it charges up the power meter, but it also changes the elevation. So now you can do what you couldn't do before in FIFA, which is shoot a low, hard ball into the bottom corners, you can keep it low and shoot it hard. But my fingers are so long that I have a hard time holding the thing and not having them touch the back touch, which defeats the whole thing because there's a little light that lights up and says, oh, I'm sorry, you're touching the back touch, and that's not going to work right now.
Yeah, I didn't play FIFA, but I ran into some of those, I don't know what I'm touching in the back here, and I didn't mean to actually touch that in the back. Like the worst for that for me was when I played Shinobi Do 2 last year at E3, and that was pretty rough. Like I was just pulling, I was like throwing stars all over the place. I was like, what the fuck is going on? But I didn't play FIFA, but I played a bunch of stuff at CES. Like I played Resistance, Burning Skies, and I played
which is coming out a month after the launch.
Yeah,
so that's kind of cool. It means that when you buy your Vita, you're probably like, if you're into that sort of game, you're probably buying Uncharted, right? And instead of having to choose, well, do I buy Uncharted or do I buy Resistance, if you've got the sort of coin to go buy a Vita in the first place and enough disposable to buy a game or two, then having something else to put on your brand new $250 device a month later is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I will say in in terms of not so positive previews, Resistance, Burning Skies did not really play very well for me, and I
haven't checked it out.
It's, I don't know. I'm. They obviously have time. It has promise. these things could be fixed, but it was not my game.
You know, what
choice,
game
but.
That I didn't know about that I played day before yesterday and really were really 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 pleasantly surprised by? The unfortunately horribly named Unit 13.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but positive things from people on
how do you
that.
Wind up, by the way, how do you wind up with the name Unit 13? That's so... It's not Unit 11. We skipped Unit 12. It's Unit 13.
I don't know. I mean, I think some of those games have some branding, like SOCOM and MAG. Those guys work on some pretty boring named games. Like SOCOM Fireteam Bravo 3 was one of them.
Or like, there was that Vita game that just changed their name from Ruin to like Warrior Legend or something.
Warrior's Lair.
Yeah, Warrior's Lair. It's just like Ruin just sounds better anyway, and you change it to Warrior's Lair, which is already boring as hell too.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. Like, I think naming your game those names are just so easily forgettable that it's kind of unfortunate.
The worst was like Shadow Complex. Because then it was originally Alpha Complex, and then there was another game that was Shadow Lair at the same time, and it was just like,
But Unit 13, pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, I haven't played it, but everybody that I talked to absolutely loved it.
Looks gorgeous. Yeah. It's that tactical pace, Tom Clancy sort of, work with a partner and work your way through levels, almost like the terrorist hunts in Rainbow Six. I thought it was really fun, and it's made fairly... well adapted to the handheld space, and it's 36 levels,
And it's more about just go and play the levels than it is trying to be some big narrative experience, which, you know, so often now shooters do have that. We've been talking a lot about stories, and this is sort of eschews this whole the story thing and says, you know what, here's some operatives, here's some cool missions they could go do, go run them, try them with other character classes, try them with other loadouts, try to play them different ways, post your score, compare your score to your friends, and be done with it. Go play a mission in 10 minutes.
So you think that that's one of the games that is like appropriate for a Vita as opposed to a console?
I think the way they put that thing together is really smartly done.
Okay.
And I was really surprisingly enjoying playing it. You know, like they did some cool things. Like, for instance, it has a lot of cover-based action because it's a tactical shooter. And they did, you know, small tricks, for instance, having the vault over cover just be a tap on the screen right next to where the thumbstick is.
Mm-hmm.
It was intuitive. It was like right there. It showed you the little vault over cover thing, and you just tapped the front of it, and it was right there. It made sense. They moved reload to just the bottom right-hand corner picture of your gun. You tap on it, it reloads your gun. That's the sort of incorporation of the touchscreen that makes sense to me. And they didn't go batshit crazy with it beyond that. There's no like magic back touch stuff that you do or other crazy things. They have two sticks. They have triggers on the front. And, it's traditional FPS controls with a couple of things that work nice because they have a touchscreen.
Yeah, I saw a couple examples of games that use touchscreen and back touch like pretty well, but you know, like it still feels like you're in that kind of early stage of making those kinds of games. Like
mm-hmm.
Super Stardust Delta, like I love Super Stardust mm-hmm. on PS3. That's just like a fascinating arcade experience.
I love everything Housemarque does, really.
But one of the things that's a little weird about it is that you have like these mines and missiles that you can use, and they kind of require you, well, they don't require you to, but I think the default is that you touch the back screen and release it, and you can kind of like move it around, so you can like target something and then like drop a bomb, and you can kind of guide where you want it to land or where
by
you
using
want it
your finger on the back of it.
Yeah. So, but the thing is that's a twin stick shooter, right?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of hard to focus on anything but like moving your thumbs in the right
yeah.
direction, and like you have to kind of like take your thumb off and reach over to the touch screen and touch where you want to drop
yeah,
this bomb, and you're trying to
dude, FIFA
avoid.
Has a similar problem in its passing game, in that one of the innovations that they have is
yeah.
that you can pass by tapping on the screen, but to do that you have to pull your fingers off the sticks so
yeah.
and off the buttons.
Yeah,
I think most of that stuff they have physical button alternatives for, like you can from what I understand, you in Super Stardust you can say, hey, I just want to attach this to the
well, so the
R
guidance
L.
thing is cool, and
yeah.
the same thing with FIFA, like being able to you can tap a spot on the field and literally put a through pass wherever the hell you want to put it so your guy can run to it, but
yeah.
to do that you do have to pull your you have to figure out the finger gymnastics of how you want to make that control system work.
Yeah, and I played Escape Plan. Did you guys play any of that?
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's neat. It's a Sony Santa Monica Studios, and I think Funbits Interactive is making it. But it's like a little puzzle platformer kind of thing where it's mostly all touchscreen based, and you're trying to guide these two guys through this. They're trying to escape some factory or prison or something like that. But you basically do a lot of like touchscreen swipes, and you like. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, but there's like pipes that emit poisonous gas. You could like put your thumb over the pipe on the touchscreen and then guide the guy through it. But the whole time you have to keep your thumb on the pipe, and you can like move obstacles out of the way by pushing them forward or backward.
It has a really cool advanced adventure game vibe to it. The old like point and click adventures.
Yeah.
But now using the touchscreen to interact with stuff in the environment, like the next step forward beyond, I used to be able to just click with a cursor.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can tap and I can pinch and I can, you know, one of the other things they do in that game is they have that inflation mechanic where
yep.
then you squeeze mm-hmm. the guy and get the jet of air to come out of him to control how he moves through the space.
Yeah. He actually farts when you do that. it is a fart that
yeah.
he does. Yeah. So
it's cool.
I
visited the studio because they're up in Seattle when I was there for PAX, and then like I love the amount of creativity that those guys have invested in this game. They have
so those are the neat experiences, and that's the stuff I think that fits really well for that platform.
Yeah.
I mean, like you could play Escape Plan just by like using the D-pad and moving it to the right, and the guy will move to the right. But it's like, what's the fun in that?
Yeah.
But I think there are a couple games that I'm still like not super convinced that are Vita appropriate.
I've only played one Vita game, and that was Uncharted Golden Abyss, which is Sony Bend. Is Sony Bend doing the Resistance game as well? Because I know they did the other portable Resistance game.
I don't think so. I think somebody else is doing Resistance Burning Skies, but I can't write. Their name escapes me right now.
So the thing is that it is a full-fledged Uncharted game. The first chapter is an hour and a half. It is like an actual Uncharted game that you'd play. It looks, first of all, looks fantastic. They do cheat a little bit, like, you know, when you go into Uncharted 2 when you climb the tower in the building and you see the entire city, they cheat a little bit because it's paintings in the background and things like that, but it looks beautiful. But it does use a lot of touch stuff very strangely. So first of all, the shooting in the game is a little sluggish, a little bit like people said that Uncharted 3 had issues. And, you know, the hitboxes are so small because you're firing at a guy that's, you know, far away. And, you know, you have to try to aim at his head, and the controls are a little sluggish. And for me, I have giant meat mitts for hands, so it's difficult at some points. But then they use touchscreen in a very strange way. If you run up to a guy to melee him, you have to tap on the screen. There's a little fist icon, and you fight him. And every single enemy that I would try to melee kill, they would fight back. And the way that you have to counter their counters is by drawing on the screen. It'll show you which way to swipe. And you literally, like, so you have to, like, run up to a guy and then take your hand off of the controls to get to the screen and swipe in the direction that it tells you to swipe. It's sort of like a QTE moment, but with your finger. And they use the back touch to, when you pick up artifacts, you have to examine them and use the back touch to rotate objects, but the sensitivity on it was really high when I was playing it. I was playing the Japanese version that's been released already in Japan on a Japanese Vita. And, but then some of it was just like, I'm playing Uncharted and doing things that you've never done in Uncharted games. It's like playing, I said this during the break, it's like Uncharted CSI, where you, like, pull out the piece of paper and then you have to rub the screen to get the charcoal outline and the charcoal print. And there's so many things like that that they've added to the game that it feels like they've created an Uncharted game and then injected all of the hardware elements that the Vita can do, rather than trying to make it work, I think, in a better way for that game.
Yeah,
and it's not a portable experience. It's a full-fledged Uncharted game, which, for me liking the series, I'm excited for, but it's not really built for the portable experience, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that it was the same thing with the DS, right? You know, there were a lot of touchscreen functionality and microphone functionality, or like had to blow into the microphone to do stuff, and you had to draw a Pac-Man and then send it off to, you know, eat ghosts. And those weren't great games necessarily, but they were interesting proofs of concept and showcase pieces. And I'm really looking forward to us kind of getting past that.
Yeah.
But the thing that I've always really harped on the Vita is that is the cloud stuff is the most interesting thing for me, since that game Ruins now Warrior's Lair. I don't know why they put Lair in a title. But because
you're going to fight a volcano at the end of it.
No, I don't know. Given Lair's history on the PlayStation. Anyway, I think that's the thing that's really going to differentiate that system a lot more than a lot of this touchscreen-based stuff. And I think I was talking to you, but that Nier is probably the most interesting.
I think aspect. So. Yeah, I mean, I'm completely in agreement, because I think that's one of the things, along with having great games, one of the things they have to figure out is, because of the disruption, which is a great way to put it, that the iOS devices create, how do you create your own disruption to get my Vita back in my hand, back in my mainstream idea of, oh, I want to carry this thing with me. I want to be engaged with
it. Yeah, you can't carry that thing with you. It is really huge.
Yeah, you can.
It's huge, man.
I can carry this thing with me. I'm holding an iPad in my hand.
I can have my iPhone in my pocket and play an iPhone game on the bus. I'm not going to pull out my Vita. First of all, I'm not going to have a Vita in my pocket, because the sticks also come out too.
But if you're on the bus, you got your bag with you of some sort. Come on.
I don't know. The system, I'm not saying that if there's anything wrong with the system that it's big. I mean, we were talking about before. Like, Sony makes the Ferrari of hardware, and this is certainly the Ferrari of handheld hardware. So, I mean, I just think it's not really a portable thing that I would carry around with me.
I agree with you about the idea of how you define portability. Mm-hmm. I think, though, that if you are disruptive enough, like I could argue that this iPad is, then you find ways to carry it around with you. And that's what Nier, to me, needs to accomplish. Nier has to – you don't think so, Dave?
I do, and that's why I think and I like the Vita quite a bit. I mean, I've messed around with it only recently, and I was like, wow, it's very cool. And we might want to do a Vita game, so I'm not sitting here knocking it. I like the 3DS quite a bit. It still gives me a little bit of a headache, but with the 3D part. But so I'll preface that, or I'll preface what I'm about to say by saying that. But to me, it's kind of like having the world's greatest radio drama after movies have been invented, or television, and only in the sense that I and that's not a. There's nothing. I mean, I think Sony and Nintendo have come to the table with what they should have. They're great. They're cool. They're impressive. But I honestly think it's done. You know, I do. And I think consoles are on the same path. I think ultimately, sooner than later, we're going to be playing games from Sony Studios, Microsoft Studios, and Nintendo Studios, you know, pumped into our television, probably running, you know, on a browser, whether or not that's actually a cloud-based, you know, streaming thing like OnLive, or whether that's actually simply a browser on your PC that you are, or on your Mac that you're able to get on your television that is a PC-enabled TV or whatever. It doesn't make sense to me anymore when we've seen the beginnings of what has happened to the handheld market, that you're going to be able to disrupt it to bring people back in the numbers that they're used to. Now, I think Vita may end up, and I think it would be great if it ends up being kind of the hardcore gamers' go-to portable, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think it'd be awesome. But when you talk about the iPad, it's you carry it around because, I mean, literally I had an experience with the iPad the other day where I put it down after about 3 hours. And it wasn't like when you get a new toy and you just want to do everything. I read a book. I watched that Steve Carell movie with Julianne Moore. What's that? Crazy Stupid Love or whatever it's called. I tweeted. I updated my blog. And I did one other thing on it. And it wasn't like I'm doing it because I want to use this. It had just
there.
No, seamlessly become a part of my life. I think unless you know the Vita or the 3DS is offering games that are so staggeringly amazing that I think the vast majority of people are going to say, well, that's great, but the barrier of entry, the barrier of practicality of carrying around a separate device just for games, I honestly think those days are numbered. I think honestly, I would love to see Sony take the Vita and turn it into a fucking phone. You know, I'd love a gamer's phone. You know, I know they're trying that with Xperia Play. But yeah. I mean, obviously you're running such antiquated, you know, old games, but I mean, a lot of it is just, you know, it's not practical anymore. It's like, if you can get your gaming fix on, I mean, seriously, if you're on a fucking bus and you want your gaming fix, you're probably, you know, you're just as well off with the vast majority of shit you can get on your phone. I mean, how many people are
on
a bus?
There's still a big difference. I mean, number one,
there's a lot of games that I
play on the iPad where, you know, I do really wish that I had a controller.
There's no doubt. You know, I'm not, let me be clear.
Suction cup buttons
no,
and
no,
sticks
no.
are
I'm not,
no substitute.
I'm not, I am absolutely not saying that the games on Vita, like if you download one of these Game Loft games, they tried to rip off Uncharted or something and you play the Vita Uncharted. I'm not by any means suggesting, both from an execution and a quality standpoint, that you're going to get a good enough experience on your phone. I'm saying that the experiences that you can currently get on your phone, I think, scratch the itch of people who want to be out in
That's
the world playing a game for 5, 10, 20 minutes. And
we've talked about that.
Burden of carrying a system just for gaming, I think that's going to be too much for the vast majority of people.
Time fillers. They're not time makers. You don't make time to go play these iOS games typically, although there are meaty iOS games that people will make time to play. I mean, and people have even said, hey, I made time to play Angry Birds when I was really into it because I wanted to keep advancing. But the big way they're being consumed is as time fillers. Oh, I've got 5 minutes here. I'm going to grab my phone and you know, and I'm going to play Jetpack or something.
I still think, like, for me and my gameplay experience, the 3DS and the Vita are still always going to be tethered to my home or to a Wi-Fi spot. Whereas, I mean, I know there's the 3G version of the Vita, but, you know, I have my phone that I can, if I want to do a quick hit game on a bus or something, I can do that and have that quick experience. But I think it goes to, like, the PSP kind of fell into this trap of, like, making those really hardcore games that were, like, PS2 quality games. And then beyond that, I think the Vita is going for that now, where it is, you know, Uncharted. I would, you know, I like the Uncharted universe, but I don't know that people are going to want to, who love Uncharted, are going to want to buy the Vita for Uncharted as to, you know, do all these touchscreen things as much as they are just buying it because they know Uncharted and they love Uncharted on PS3 and they want more of Uncharted.
Yeah.
So that's why the injection of the hardware, what the hardware can do into Uncharted is a great tech demo for what it is possible, but I just don't know if like you're a really hardcore Uncharted fan, you're gonna be like, oh, now I can rub the charcoal printing
so
myself.
This
just...
is though one of the reasons again that I think that Nier is so important to how Vita is able to find its way over the next 12 to 18 months, because it does need something more than like what you're talking about. It needs something more than just I can do a great game on it, and that's one of the places you could get it. And then interconnectivity with PS3 could be it. Maybe it's a portal for some of those games that are delivered to us through the series of tubes.
I think it's that extension of my console experience.
I just don't understand what you're... I didn't want to interrupt. I don't understand what you portal that...
Well, so if we're talking about, you know, delivering games like through via like OnLive or Gaikai, when we needed some sort of device, maybe it could be the right device for doing that. Or maybe Sony uses it in some way to develop their own sort of streaming service like that.
Yeah, I think as a complement to the PS3, I think it has a lot of opportunities to it. Like that Warrior's Rune, that's a great proof of concept for playing a game on the PS3 and then continuing to play it on a Vita, like when we're at it traveling for an event or something like that. That sounds really fun.
So by the way, your Resistance game, Nihilistic.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Who famously were the developers who burned off several years on StarCraft Ghost.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah. That's right. Oh, yeah.
But actually, in terms of pads, one of the things that I thought was pretty neat that I saw at CES was that Sony did have a couple of their PlayStation-certified phones and pads. You know, they added PS3 DualShock support to those platforms.
Oh, really?
So you can, like, you're still playing Crash Bandicoot on a phone. But
controller is now the size of the phone.
Right. Yeah, but you can play it on a PS3 DualShock, and you can run that phone out to a TV. So you've basically got this.
But it's the same old shit, though.
I know.
Right now it's the same old shit.
But
I mean, no, I don't mean the game. I mean, it's just like, and I don't, and I, this is not a Sony thing. This is just, and again, I'm not here to, you know, proselytize Apple, but it's like, it's the thing they get. Or at least, I don't know how much now with Jobs gone, how much of it was just him versus the company. But it's like, that so many other technology companies just don't fucking get. And it's like, yeah, I know you can. It's like, well, if you take this cord and you hook this up, you can get this control. It's like, who the fuck? It's like they don't make technology for life. They make it for these. I mean, who's got the fucking, who wants to do that, though?
Well, actually, I mean, if this was,
Michael apparently might.
Yeah, if the iPad 3 was as powerful as PS3 and I could hook it up to my TV.
Yep.
And
you've got an iPad 3 and a TV and your controller. I mean.
And then I don't need my PS3 anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the console goes away. The console becomes
But you can
the
do
portable.
That now, though, right?
No, I know. But I'm saying if, like, a Sony does that and, like, puts, like, high-quality Uncharted games that I can play with a PS3 pad to my thing that I just take anywhere with me anyway and then hook it up to my TV, it'd be pretty easy. I'm on board with that.
I think you're right if it's hooking up to your TV means, hey, it happens to be in the house and it just immediately knows it's in the house. But if it's, like... Hook it up.
You mean just like wireless signal going back and forth?
And it's easy and it's right. I just think that's so.
It's going to get to that point. But
to no end that so much of this shit is just. It's like made by hardware people for hardware people. And it's like, dude, I don't want to fucking watch Leo Laporte to figure the fuck out how to play this thing. I just want to fucking play it. You know? And I want to.
All right, I got to bring two more things in here before we get out of here. One of them we will table until next week because it's going to be in the Diablo 3 beta that you can play if you happen to be in the test, and I have an account, so I'll go check it out. That is that they're just massively overhauling core parts of the game, including changing the character stat set. So they're dumping the old ones and they're moving over to a new system, which sounds very familiar, of strength, dex, intellect, and intellect and vitality, which sounds like traditional stuff. They're getting rid of scrolls of identification. They're adding an automatic potion slot. They're taking out the Cauldron of Jordan and Nephilim cube because they've put in town portals again, because they've evidently solved the whole problem that they used to have with town portaling. And on top of all that, though they haven't gotten to it yet, they're also going to change the skill system in the game and the rune system, but they're going to do that down the road. Holy shit.
Yeah.
What happened?
I don't know. They added a bunch of stuff to Diablo 3 that seemed like really good ideas, like stuff you saw in Torchlight. You know, like you've got your companion that just takes your gear and sends it back to town, and money comes back automatically.
But we think we're at the end. I mean, we think we're at the end, and they're about to release the game, and then they say, "Oh, actually, we're not really ready to release the game yet. I'm sorry, so sorry."
It's Blizzard. I guess no product before its time. But and then finally, the big announcement. So we'll come back to that next week after we've had a chance to check it out and see if we can figure out what that was all about. And then we didn't show it to David in the break like we said we would. But Resident Evil 6, the trailer hit, and it's crazy town. It's absolute crazy town. So what do you make of it? Anybody? No one's excited about Resident Evil 6?
It,
yeah, so. I think it's just...
You've watched it?
Crazy bananas. I don't know.
Yeah,
there's so much going on at this point that I need a Resident Evil. Like, for me, they need to just do Resident Evil. Like, let's start this over.
You need like
I have
a whole
no
refresher
idea what's going on anymore.
So, the thing that made me laugh is because I like Resident Evil, but we were talking about Hunk, and like there's a rumor that Hunk is in this game. And,
so there's a third protagonist. So they show two of the protagonists, and then the third protagonist is this mystery guy. And then there's the prominent rumor now is that it's going to be Hunk, and it fits that it would be Hunk.
And both me and Michael and David were confused as to what that meant, and like we don't really know.
You made a tofu joke or something.
Yeah. You made a tofu joke, and I remember that because it's just one of those absurd things, but like some people, I was reading the comments when the trailer actually was shown off for the first time, and everyone's like, "Ashley's back." I was like, "Who's Ashley again?" Like, I don't remember. And then you see the president, and then
the president's a zombie.
And then the only things that I saw that I found interesting was like the sliding into cover stuff was cool.
See, now if you'd watched the animated movie that I saw at TGS a couple of years ago, you'd be able to put all this stuff together.
Yeah. Horrible. So the sliding into cover stuff is cool. You could slide and like shoot at the same time, which I assume means you can walk and shoot, but we'll see.
Yeah, like
I think if you walk and shoot in the Resident Evil universe, that gives you the T-virus, so I'm not entirely sure. And then there's like other stuff too, like the civilians when Chris Redfield and his team go into, I guess it's Hong Kong, it looks like, there's civilians running around, and then you
film
crews and stuff, and he's pushing people out of the way, which is sort of that AI technology that Assassin's Creed uses as well. Mm-hmm. Grip Entertainment does that stuff. They did it for Deus Ex too. So like that stuff is kind of cool. The technology aspect of it is cool. But like in terms of the narrative and story, I mean, like I like Resident Evil, but I mean, I couldn't tell you one character from another really.
Yeah. It does look like there's some interesting gameplay layers to this because you know, you're fighting a bunch of humans too. Like mercenaries. And
it looks like they're trying to bring back the sort of the atmosphere and aesthetic of and like the scariness of Resident Evil 4 with the action elements of Resident Evil 5.
I'd go back before Resident Evil 4. I think they're trying to bring back the survival horror era of it. I mean,
I didn't get that vibe.
You don't think so?
No.
Come on, they turned the president into a zombie right off the bat.
But it was so, it was just the trailer, but it was so action oriented that and it felt like you were going to be in these big open environments like the streets of Hong Kong.
Right.
That it just I didn't get that survival horror vibe. But
think back to like Nemesis, where you were being. I mean, Nemesis had big moments of being chased and giant monsters after you. I mean, they can have those heavy action elements if those are the scare payoffs. I mean, the point is, do they have the dramatic tension to build up to those points?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It looks interesting. I'll
play it.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll let you guys out there in the forums weigh in and tell us what you thought of the Resident Evil 6 trailer. We also have a big breakdown that Andrew's been working on back on the site of pieces of it. Yeah, I was actually just checking it out right here.
Oh, awesome.
And with that, we will bring her to a close with Finishing Moves.
Finishing Moves.
Zav, I'll let you kick her off.
Hey, if you go to shacknews.com right now, our game of the year was just announced. We mentioned it earlier in the show. It is The Witcher 2 Assassins of Kings, available on the PC. It's actually coming out on Xbox 360 in May, I believe. So go to shacknews.com today and check out the game of the year post, and you can read the rest of the nominations or the award winners. And on Monday, we'll have a recap with a pretty cool video that Ryan, who works for us, is putting together. So thanks for supporting it, and make sure to go to shacknews.com.
One of the cooler things that I saw on the Vita was the chat functionality in Unit 13. Did you play co-op at all?
No.
So you didn't play it? So one of the things that's cool is that you don't have to have a dedicated mic headset to play co-op with voice chat, because the voice and noise canceling function of the Vita's built-in mic works great. So we were able, in this crowded social club, to play online connected and use voice chat. And it was just as if we were wearing an Xbox communicator headset. I was pretty impressed by the voice chat communication part of it. That was really pretty cool.
Cool.
Something I didn't know about.
Well, I guess if I'm gonna say, you know, if you're at all interested in this SOPA and PIPA stuff going on, one, make sure you reach out to your representative, and then two, to vote with your dollar. That's a very important thing to do. And if you're going to vote with your dollar, maybe consider buying Pushmo for the 3DS, because that is a great game.
All right. Pushmo. Everyone does love Pushmo.
Yeah.
David, you can finish her off.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I got nothing. I found out that Garnett works for Shaq News. I didn't know that. So he's like, I don't want to fucking pimp myself. I'm going to pimp him. I thought this was his full-time job. And he's like, no, I actually write shit over there. So if you didn't know that, now you know that. So I get 10% of everything he makes from now on. So, but no, buy Twisted Metal if you like Twisted Metal. We're proud of it. The team at Eat Sleep Play, thank you so much for letting me represent you these last 3 years, being sort of the voice of the game. You guys are amazing, and I'm grateful to be working with you, and same with Sony Santa Monica. So if you like Twisted Metal, we hope you like this new one. And if you don't, hey, the Mass Effect 3 demo hits that same day, so enjoy that.
Congrats on finishing up the game, David, and thanks very, very, very much for taking the time out to do this with us today.
Thanks,
I know you're busy, got a ton going on, and we dig it. I'm looking forward to DICE.
Cool, me too.
I'm going to be a good listener, I hope.
I got to come up with something to talk about.
Yeah, so make it good.
Anybody on Shaq got any ideas, tell me what I should fucking talk about, because all next week is me sitting around my house with my whiteboard going, what am I going to say?
It'll be awesome.
Cool.
And also check out Michael McWhorter on Game Trailers. He's writing things there. If you want to know about where people write things.
If you want to see the things that I write and onto a web form on the internet, go to sidemission.com.
All right. And thanks, as always, to Atlantis Group in Brooklyn and Del Rio in the booth. And until next week, we are Ghost. The same line too. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you. Show you that I care. Show you that I listen. Show you that I'm here. I showed you all of that. I showed you everything. I gave my all to y'all. Following those are 3 rings. You know more about me. Anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted. Everything I ever needed. But I'm still struggling. Still competing for your love. Your heart. And you, always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.